And then I will turn the floor over to you, madam.
And Vail and Carrie, can you please do a backup recording? Thank you.
On it, Al.
Okay, looks like the participants have filled in. The floor is yours, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Billy. Welcome to the Friday, February 11th, 2022, Coastal Commission meeting. Welcome, members of the public, commissioners, and staff. All right, we're going to proceed to the roll call. Ms. Miller?
Commissioner Faustinos.
Present.
Commissioner Escalante.
Present.
Commissioner Harmon.
Here.
Commissioner Hart.
Here.
Commissioner Kunkel.
Here.
Commissioner Uranga.
Present.
Commissioner Wilson.
Aquí.
Commissioner Brownsey. Chair Brownsey.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And did you get Commissioner Amanzada?
I did not. Commissioner Amanzada.
There she is. And Rice will be 10 minutes late, but she'll be here. Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Miller. And first item we're going to do is I'm going to hand it to our Deputy General Counsel, Alex Halperin, to report out from yesterday's closed session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. The Commission met in closed session yesterday, February 10th, 2022. The Commission received litigation information and advice and provided direction on Shear Development Company, LLC versus Coastal Commission, Stanger et al. Versus Coastal Commission, Tibbetts et al. Versus Coastal Commission, and one matter of potential litigation. The Commission also received information about Adamski et al. Versus Coastal Commission, Kotzen et al. Versus Coastal Commission, Lent versus Coastal Commission, Pappas et al. Versus State Coastal Conservancy, and Santa Monica Bayside Owners Association versus City of Santa Monica and California Coastal Commission, and Wall versus Coastal Commission. And that concludes the report.
Thank you, Mr. Halperin. Appreciate that. Before I turn the meeting over to Dr. Hucklebridge for the virtual meeting procedures and agenda changes, I want to make one announcement because I know that there is a lot of public interest in this particular matter. On March 17th, which is a Thursday following our regularly scheduled meeting, the item regarding the Poseidon desalination plant will be scheduled. It will be a virtual meeting. After a lot of internal discussion, it was determined that that would be the safest and most efficacious procedure. So I'll announce that I'm announcing that this morning so people can plan on their calendars a special hearing on March 17th. And I'll announce that at the end of today's hearing as well. Okay, with that, Dr. Hucklebridge, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So I will be going over the virtual hearing procedures this morning. As a result of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, this Coastal Commission meeting is occurring through the video conferencing service Zoom to host the meeting and allow for remote public participation. This virtual meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at the calspan.org web address. If you have access to the internet and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not to speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSPAN website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so through the Zoom platform or by phone. On the commission's webpage, we have posted the virtual hearing procedures, a guide for how to provide comments via Zoom or by phone. If you have access to the commission's webpage, you will find the instructions here as indicated by the yellow arrow. Next slide, please. There is also a link to fill out a speaker request as shown by the red arrow. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 8:30 a.m. on each day of the meeting. During general public comment, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. If you wish to speak on a specific agenda item today and have not already done so, you may do so now. We will accept a request to speak up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have access to the internet, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 415-904-5202. Again, that number is 415-904-5202. Staff will provide you with the telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. If you are using a computer or similar device, when it is your time to address the commission, the meeting organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone. If you're using a phone, the meeting organizer will give you instructions for how to unmute the phone. Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures, and I can now move on to item 3, agenda changes for today.
Thank you.
So all of the items listed in the agenda changes memo for today are accurate, and I'll run through them very quickly. First, item 8A, a County of Del Norte LCP amendment, time extension is moved to consent. Item 10A, permit amendment from Mendocino County, is also moved to consent. Item 12A, the CDP application for Hog Island Oyster Company, moved to consent. Item 14A, a City of Half Moon Bay LCP amendment, also moved to consent. Item 16A, City of Santa Cruz LCP amendment, moved to consent. Item 16B, another Santa Cruz County LCP amendment, also moved to consent. And item 16C, a third Santa Cruz County LCP amendment, also moved to consent. And that concludes agenda changes for today.
Great, thank you, Dr. Hucklebridge. Just let me ask you, I just wanna make sure I got this one change on item number, is 9A that appeal on consent or not?
No, that's an NSI appeal. So we will be having a very short.
Okay, got it.
Presentation right. On that, and we'll determine whether we need to go to a full hearing.
Okay, I think I just marked it incorrectly. So thank you for that clarification. All right, with that, we are going to move to general public comment. This is an opportunity where members of the public can comment on issues not before the commission on this month's agenda. Members of the public will have 2 minutes to make their statement. And so we're going to hand this over to Carrie, who is our meeting manager. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and will bring you into the meeting when it is your turn. In order to allow for live video testimony, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload and this may take a moment. To speed up the process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to attendee mode. Several helpful tips. There is a raise hand function that we will ask you to use if we have trouble finding you. If you're using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button to click. When it is your turn to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on the phone by dialing *6. First up, we will have Aliyah Adamski, followed by Karen Lair, followed by Rob Hamilton. I'm having trouble locating Aliyah Adamski, so please raise your hand. If you're on the phone, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. In the meantime, I have promoted Karen Lair. Karen, you should be in as a panelist. You may unmute yourself, turn on your camera if you'd like, and state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Karen Lair, and I want to thank you all this morning very much for the work that you have done to help us and support us in our fight against the NCTD fencing of the bluffs of the coastal area in Del Mar. But before I start with my presentation, I would like to just clarify some comments that were made yesterday by Sean Loofborough, the chief of safety and security for NCTD. He spoke yesterday, and some of his comments that he made we felt were very misleading. He talked about 41 coaster accidents and inferred that those were all in the city of Del Mar. They were not. In fact, there have been 6 fatalities in the city of Del Mar in the past 5 years. It's important to note that over 80% of those fatalities have been in the area that is where the safe crossing is in Del Mar. They have not been in the area that NCTD is proposing to fence off. So I think that while people are entitled to their own opinion, they are not entitled to their own facts. So that I would ask that Mr. Loofborough get his facts straight and do not mislead the NCTD, the rest of the board for NCTD, nor the public, nor the members of the Coastal Commission, but yet get the facts straight and say that the areas in Del Mar that need attention are where the safe crossing is in Del Mar today. Thank you. Please turn to the slides, next page. Again, thanking the Coastal Commission for the hard work that you have done to protect the fragile bluffs. The laws in the state of California are there for a reason, and nobody should be able to violate those. Next slide, please. NCTD must follow the laws. I appreciate the fact that the Coastal Commission is speaking up because you have the voice in the cloud to hold them accountable. Their fence is dangerous. Their proposals are dangerous. There are safer alternatives. The dangerous fence will undermine the bluffs by drilling 1,500 post holes 3 feet deep by 1 foot wide, adding over 660,000 pounds of weight to those fragile bluffs. Their fence violates the permit they received for the bluff stabilization. And thank you very much for your time. Their fencing plans are flawed, and I hope that you continue your fight against them.
Thank you. Next is Rob Hamilton, followed by Carmen Nespor, followed by Robin Rudisell. Rob Hamilton, it is now your turn. Please unmute yourself and begin.
Good morning, Chair Brownsey and commissioners. I'm Rob Hamilton, president of Hamilton Biological Incorporated. I'm speaking to you this morning about the Sanderling Waldorf School site in Encinitas. Next slide, please. In July 2020, the city of Encinitas approved a school on the small site, which is zoned rural residential, and the neighbors appealed this issuance of a CDP based on several substantive issues involving sensitive natural resources. Next slide, please. The habitat was cleared from the site in 2010 without a permit, despite LCP policy 9.8 that requires city review of those kind of actions. Next slide, please. It was again cleared in 2016 without a permit. And when the school went to EIR, the applicant argued that because the site had been repeatedly disturbed, that coastal sage scrub that's now developing there can't be considered ESHA. Next slide. Between 2016 and 2020, deer weeds started to naturally recolonize the site, and that's an early colonizer of coastal sage scrub recovery. Next slide. Next slide, please. In September 2020, I'm sorry, go back one, please. In September 2020, with the project under appeal, the school scraped a large area of deerweed from the site. Next slide. After they were told to stop scraping, they installed an irrigation system 3 weeks later that failed. Next slide, please. So coastal staff stopped this from happening and the school agreed to stop the removal, but the damage is already done. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So the site is now for sale. Despite having been scraped 3 times in the last 10 years, no restoration was done. And I just don't want the landowner to be able to profit from having removed the habitat without a permit. And we'd like to see enforcement brought. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Carmen Nespor. Please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Good morning, commission members. My name is Carmen Nespor, and I'm appellant of the Sanderling Project in Encinitas. Our appeal was submitted over 18 months ago, and staff is still considering whether or not we have raised a substantial issue. As Rob just showed you, after our appeal was filed, the applicant violated twice the Coastal Act, first with unpermitted grading activities and then with installation of the unpermitted irrigation system. These actions damaged sensitive natural resources and wasted a lot of water. As you see on this first photo, the grading activities. And next slide, please. Next photo.
This may be the only photo I have. Man.
Oh, there was a little movie with it of 10 seconds.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay. Okay, that this was the water leak, and this had been running for a long time. So, and in neither case was any penalty or consequence given. And my question is, why not, when the situation called for it? Enforcement after the first violation would have made the applicants to take the situation more seriously and probably would have prevented the second violation to happen with its consequential damages. And as Rob discussed, these violations change the baseline situation in advantage of the violator by removing sensitive resources that otherwise might limit their development options. So how unfair is it to just let this go? Or worse, to even reward this with the CDP in the end? To not use enforcement rules defeats the purpose of trying to protect the natural resources. So in our case, after 18 months, we're still waiting to learn whether staff is going to bring enforcement action or whether they are processing the appeal and perhaps finding no substantial issue. And meanwhile, the landowner is attempting to sell the property minus the sensitive habitat they removed without penalty. So therefore, I ask the Coastal Commission, which is the most valuable institution in California, to utilize and use enforcement authorizations to the fullest extent, as this is needed for the Coastal Act to function properly. Thank you for all the great work that you do and have done. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Robin Rudisill, followed by Lydia Ponce, followed by Juliano Khalil. Robin Rudisill, please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, it's Robin Rudisill from Venice. With the passage of AB 433, we can finally effectively work to stop the rampant land use lawlessness in the coastal zone. One of the tricks to evade the Coastal Act is that a given land use law or conditions are violated, maybe a complaint will be filed and then an order to comply issued. To resolve that, a CDP is filed and then they just never move forward with it. I've seen that go on for years with the violations just going on and on. Without penalties, there's no hook to stop it. One project, 2819 Grayson, still pending in your enforcement group, violated the regulations for coastal exemptions. There was an appeal. You gave them a stop work order and required a CDP. We found out a few months later that they never stopped work as a delay simply did not fit the International Investor Group's business plan. They got their CFO and sold it for multi-millions of profit. Months later, the new owner applied for and was eventually issued an after-the-fact CDP. These bad actors have had no reason not to just blow through the law and ask for forgiveness later. 1214 Abbot Kinney, 1301 Abbot Kinney, 1511 Abbot Kinney, all operating as commercial uses, taking away housing in violation of their permits. 1305 Abbot Kinney is grossly violating your permit's parking requirements, but complaints are filed and it's not dealt with as it's not a priority. The de novo hearing for 1511 Abbot Kinney has been pending for 5 or 6 years, so they've simply continued in their violations with no incentive to stop. There are so many more, all that could be solved with penalties. Penalties for this egregious behavior would make things very simple and save significant time. Applicants need to know if they violate their permits and conditions, there will be penalties. Lisa and staff, we're behind you 1,000% and really look forward to your ability to use this new tool that will allow you to much more effectively protect the precious coast. Please expedite implementation of Coastal Act Section 3821.3. Thanks.
Thank you. Next up is Lydia Ponce. Please unmute yourself and begin.
Good morning, relatives. Lydia Ponce calling from Sagna, unceded territories of the Tongva people, infamously known as Venice Beach, Venice, California. I'm calling this morning because, you know, it seems to be the theme, violations. It's not a fluke. It's intentional in regards to housing, the environment, the people, the culture, the preservation of our unique character along the California coastal coast. We have upcoming projects like 609 Broadway, where Thibodeau and Lou have invested in this property to destroy cobblestone, old antique houses that are the character of Venice, annihilating who we are and what we're about here in our eclectic community. Everything that Robin said, I want to uplift and multiply that by 25, 30 years. The 30821.3 and the ask that this morning is quite gritty. We need a task force. We have Robin Rudisill and people that do the work, do the research, take the time. No one is paying her. She comes up with so many different reasons to object and pursue denial of permits that further annihilate the environment and our culture here in Venice. Apply that to the entire California coast. There are many other people that do the work. Susan Jordan. There's many other people who take pictures of all these things. It's all recorded. We've been before you for how many years? 10 years, 11 years? You don't have to believe what I say, but a task force would actually possibly put the litigation, all the lawsuits to the side. It would probably bridge a mediation. Maybe there's a mediation part to all of this policy, laws, and ordinances, and the finger pointing back and forth to other government entities. I'm asking for you to consider a task force of community members like myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Juliano Khalil, Susan Jordan, Mandy Sackett, Ray Heimstra, and Laura Walsh. Laura Walsh, I'm having trouble locating you, so please raise your hand if you're here. In the meantime, we will begin with Juliano Khalil.
No, sorry. It's supposed to be Susan Jordan first.
Okay, well, this was the order we got it in, but Susan Jordan, please go ahead. And then you'll be followed by Juliano Khalil.
He will be available for any questions the commissioners have after the presentation. And we also had Delia sign in because I think Laura had an emergency this morning. We don't expect to use her time. So anyway, but just so you know. Okay, let me start. Susan Jordan, California Coastal Protection Network. The film you are about to see includes simulations developed by independent scientists at Virtual Planet and are based on the best available science and data. Next slide, please. Sorry. Next slide. Okay, so there you go. Are based on the best available science and data about sea level rise and tsunami projections, including COSMOS 3.0, developed by the USGS. The tools that were developed also include a 3D version and a 360 interactive viewer that will be made available to the public, including your staff and other regulatory agencies for their review and use. Next slide, please. The models relied upon are listed here, and Dr. Khalil of Virtual Planet is here today and is available for any questions regarding the simulations themselves. The opinions and views expressed belong to myself and my colleagues who worked together on the film. Please run the film now.
The world is facing a climate and ecological crisis. The last 7 years have been the warmest on record. The melting of ice across the planet is accelerating at a record rate, as are ocean temperatures, meaning seas are not only rising, but expanding. The health of our communities and future generations requires that we make tough adaptation decisions now. Join us for a look into the future at how sea level rise could change Huntington Beach, California, one of Southern California's quintessential beach towns. Well known for its surfing, sandy beaches, and bustling boardwalk and pier. The Pacific Coast Highway meanders across the shoreline, and millions of visitors each year come to spend a day at the beach. South Huntington Beach is also home to important wetlands, shown here during a king tide, the highest tide of the year, similar to what just 1 foot of sea level rise could look like on our coast. This low-lying area is extremely vulnerable to coastal flooding. As sea levels rise, wetlands can serve as vital buffers by absorbing rising seas and flooding caused by increasingly powerful storms. Public and private structures rely on the Orange County Flood Control District to stay safe from flooding and storm damage. Yet, the agency does not have plans to adapt to sea level rise, and they are facing a 90-year backlog of maintenance and improvements. South Huntington Beach is where Poseidon Water proposes to build a 50 million gallon per day mega seawater desalination plant. Here, Poseidon would construct buildings, reverse osmosis chambers, distribution pipes, and over $1 billion worth of new infrastructure, squarely within an area that will be increasingly at risk to flood hazards as sea level rises. Behind the site, you can see the AES power plant. This location is adjacent to the Ascon toxic waste dump, which could likely be compromised, releasing toxic waste into the environment. The site is also directly atop a potentially active geologic fault, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, and adjacent to several others. If this site was returned to wetlands, it could protect nearby homes and roadways from some of the sea level rise threats. Even with the massive grading proposed by Poseidon to elevate the facility, this site could still flood several times a year. At 4.1 feet of sea level rise, powerful storm waves are projected to flood across Highway 1 into nearby neighborhoods. Surrounding areas lie at much lower elevations than the proposed facility and would be completely flooded. The groundwater table is extremely close to the surface in this area, meaning we're likely to see flooding and inundation earlier than the models predict. As sea level rise reaches 4.9 feet, storms could result in significant flooding, and the site will eventually become an island, surrounded by areas increasingly likely to flood, impacting access roads to the facility, electricity, and water. Flooding will make it extremely difficult to repair and maintain buried water distribution pipelines. At 6.6 feet of sea level rise, during a storm, the surrounding neighborhoods, infrastructure, access, utilities, and water pipes will all be submerged. The oil containment berms constructed in the 1950s will be insufficient to protect the facility. Absent the berm, the Poseidon site may flood sooner. And new development is prohibited from relying on hard armoring under Huntington Beach's local coastal program. High groundwater levels may expose toxins from the Ascon site and release heavy metals and chemicals into the area and nearshore environment from where Poseidon proposes to extract our drinking water. Multiple studies show that Poseidon's proposed site is well within the designated tsunami flood zone. Regardless of sea level rise, a tsunami wave could destroy this area far beyond the coastline. The wave can reach up to 60 miles per hour and result in static water levels, shown here at the most conservative modeling estimates. Tsunami zones are important indicators of extreme risk and should inform our decisions as to where to locate critical, expensive, public-serving infrastructure. Huntington Beach's adaptive capacity to sea level rise will be severely constrained if Poseidon's proposed desalination plant is constructed at this location. Ultimately, the planning and permitting choices we make today will determine the future of our coast and oceans. We can all agree that we need sustainable, cost-effective drinking water sources. Desalination may be part of the answer, but this project, in this low-lying location, surrounded by legacy toxic waste sites, earthquake faults, and exposed to many coastal hazards, is not the right project for Huntington Beach or the rest of Orange County. We must say no to Poseidon.
Okay, why don't we move to the next speaker?
All right. I believe the other four public commenters that I had called with Ms. Jordan were using their time to show that video. So I will move on to the next commenters. Next up, we have Alan Tarkington, followed by Holly Martins, followed by Mike Meyer. Alan Tarkington, you should be able to unmute yourself and begin.
All right, thank you. Dear commissioners, I want to thank you and commend you for your commitment and your actions to preserve over 100 years of public beach and bluff access in Del Mar. And thanks to the California Attorney General for asserting state jurisdiction. The bluffs and beaches may be within the Del Mar city boundaries, but they belong to everyone. The vast majority of the people using the public bluffs are from all over San Diego, California, and beyond. North County Transit District serves a population of well over 1 million people, yet they want Del Mar, with a population of around 4,000, to take over the liability that is an estimated $1 million in annual insurance costs. They plan on a 6-foot fence to bar access and block public views unless Del Mar assumes their liability. Let's call it what it is: extortion by the district. In other much larger cities, they have buckled to North County Transit District's liability demands, but it is still extortion. Yesterday, a district representative presented misleading information on the safety in Del Mar. The slide was for the entire district, including Encinitas and Oceanside. The representative reported 64 fatalities on the entire corridor and 6 within Del Mar over the past 5 years. And most of those 6 in Del Mar were at Coast Boulevard's safe crossing and not along the bluff. Del Mar's records is safer than those of other cities that have fences already. Over 200 pedestrians on average cross the tracks at 11th Street crossing only every single day. That's over 70,000 safe crossings per year with no fatalities. And yes, the crossing could be made safer. North County Transit District is a local government district operating under state law. For the district to ignore California law is mind-boggling. It is bizarre for a local California district. And thank you, commissioners and our attorney general, for enforcing the Coastal Act and preserving public access. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Holly Martins. I'm having trouble finding you. Please raise your hand if you're here. Dial *9 if you're on the phone. We will move on to Mike Meyer. Mike Meyer, please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Good morning. My name is Mike Meyer. I wish to speak against the proposal by NCTD to build an unnecessary fence on the fragile sandstone upper bluff in front of my home in Del Mar. There is a need for a fence on the lower bluff at track level from the 13th Street to the track crossing at Coast Boulevard, where the preponderance of rare accidents occur. Information on NCTD's website states that as a common carrier by railroad, state and local permitting requirements are preempted as to any facilities that are an integral part of rail transportation. The area where we live is not an integral part of rail transportation. Our neighborhood has no effect on railroad function or safety. NCTD has no right to install a fence in our neighborhood. It appears that NCTD is using the small city of Del Mar to set a precedent as the first step in a high-stakes gambit by railroads to take control of decision-making along the coast of California. This will give railroads the power to bypass all city, state, and environmental regulations. All coastal resources, including public access, recreation, biological, geographical, and visual, will be at the mercy of the railroads, who have proven they will act with impunity to fulfill their stated goal to move more freight and people faster and more frequently at any cost. My neighbors and I urge the Coastal Commission to take all necessary measures to stop the railroad from the blatant theft of the scenic beauty of the natural bluffs and beaches and denial of public access and recreation in Del Mar. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next is Matt Druno, followed by Jeff McGuire, followed by Anna Christensen. Matt Druno, for some reason, Zoom won't let me promote you to a panelist, but I will allow you to talk. Please unmute yourself if you can and state your name for the record. Matt Druno, please unmute yourself. You might have, if you're on the phone, you can unmute yourself by dialing star six. All right, we will come back to you at the end. Jeff McGuire, I believe you are in as a panelist. Please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Hi, my name is Jeff McGuire, City of Del Mar, talking about the NCTD idea to fence this bluff out here. I want to start off by saying thank you so much for the principled stand that you've taken and the hard stand you've already taken on this. I know you've heard from so many in the community already with much better things to say than I do. I just want to point out the insanity of this project. I've lived on this bluff forever. I've watched countless surfers when a freight train is stopped, throw their boards underneath and climb under that freight train to get to the beach. This is a great piece of attraction out here in the ocean. And if NCTD puts up double fencing, it'll just lead to surfers throwing their boards over. They climb over. I don't know how many without access points are going to be spraining their ankles, breaking their ankles, and then who comes to get them? How long does that take? They're stuck on an almost 2 mile stretch of fence line inside there. This is just insanity personified. I just, again, want to say thank you so much for taking such a strong measure against this. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that if this is allowed to go forward on our coastline in this current state that it is without access points, that it is the beginning of the end that sets a precedent to destroy the access to California coastline up and down, you know, Santa Barbara, San Clemente, wherever you want to have it. That's it. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you. Next is Anna Christensen. Please unmute yourself and begin.
I believe I'm unmuted, am I not?
Yes, we can hear and see you.
Okay, thank you. I'm here for the Los Cerritos Wetlands Task Force of Sierra Club. Regarding just a more general statement, you postponed two items on yesterday's agenda, and we think that was a very wise thing to do because we believe that both of these agenda items touch on the problem of anticipatory destruction and piecemealing of projects. The OC Water District Sunset Gap Monitoring Wells Project brought forward to you, and we realize you don't really have a choice in this, but they brought only one well site to you when they have three of their five well sites as part of this project in the coastal zone. We think this is piecemealing, and we appreciate the fact that you're going, you know, to take a closer look at this, because this particular well site is on a sacred site, is on a site with multiple burials that were unearthed that were part of a CBP to try to resolve this and protect this area. Nevertheless, they stated that it was not on or near any burials, which is not okay. We also feel that the other project, the Los Cerritos Wetlands Authority's desire to drill 18 holes is also piecemealing and anticipatory destruction, because their project, the Southern Los Cerritos Wetlands Restoration Project, has not been brought to you, forward to you as a project. And their careful concern for not disturbing the wildlife or the wetlands is kind of false, because the project intends to bulldoze that entire area. And they're testing to see if the holes will support berms to protect an oil and gas operation. So we hope that we can get a more holistic look, both in the amount of land that's disturbed, but also in time, in the history, because what has been the fight, whether it's on the Bolsa Chica Mesa, which we appreciate the Coastal Commission citing and not approving the anticipatory destruction of the archaeological grading of the Mesa by Signal Landmark. So, you know, big picture, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Manly McNinch, followed by Anthony Ventura, followed by Ray Harmon. Manly McNinch, please unmute yourself and begin.
Good morning. Thank you for your time today. I'd like to speak to the upcoming urgency and need for developing offshore renewable energy. Within a year, they're going to be shutting down the first reactor at Diablo Canyon. And once that happens, the decommissioning phase starts over at Diablo. We're going to start losing jobs in a great number. And they're good paying, high earning jobs that are for the skilled workers. And we want to make sure that everything that's going on, that we start replacing these jobs with other good, high paying energy sector jobs. And everything in our country right now is moving out to offshore wind as far as the newest form of big production, offshore wind or energy production. And if we don't start planning on doing this, we're going to get caught short, and there's going to be mass amounts of people having to leave the Central Coast because it won't be employed anymore. And with the Southwest Carpenters Union, we offer a skilled and trained apprenticeship program where we can train the future builders of all these projects. And we're hoping that everything is done in a manner to where it's, we worry about people having jobs and being able to support their families. We're asking that as we go forward, that the Coastal Commission considers carefully on getting these permits and everything allowed for these projects to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Anthony Ventura. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Planning Coastal Commissioners. My name is Anthony Ventura, and I'm a representative for Local Carpenters, Local 805. With over 500 members and their families, I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo County. My first job at 18 years old was at Diablo Canyon's admin building in 1984. With the recent decommissioning of Diablo Canyon, this will impact San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties with the loss of jobs and revenue, and it will have a huge impact. I believe that clean and renewable energy, such as wind and solar, is our future for energy. That's why I'm a strong supporter of projects like Vandenberg Offshore Wind Energy, projects that use clean and renewable energy. With projects like this, this will help offset the loss of jobs from Diablo Canyon. The benefits from clean and renewable energy is many. Good paying jobs, revenue to our economy, and revitalize our community. I think that clean and renewable energy is exactly what we need heading into our future for energy. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Ray Harmon, followed by Frankie Arona, followed by Lucia Casalunuevo. Ray Harmon and Frankie Arona, I'm having trouble finding you. Please raise your hand. If you're on the phone, dial star 9. Lucia Casalunuevo, please begin your testimony.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners and staff. Thank you for allowing me to speak twice this month. I'm here, in fact, to apologize for the harsh words that I spoke on Wednesday. I spoke in frustrations and anger because we in Oceano were and still are shocked that Pier Avenue will not close this coming July, that the Plover enclosure will not be extended, and that the Arroyo Grande Creek will still be crossed. Our local newspaper wrote that State Park, Friends of Oceano Dunes, and the Coastal Commission had agreed to stay the permit. So it sounded like to us that the CC had made an internos agreement with the off-roaders and had betrayed us. However, your staff yesterday explained to us that it was a court-ordered stay requested by Friends of Oceano Dunes and granted by the court. It was, again, an error of misunderstanding and miscommunications. I apologize. Your staff also assured us that you are still very much committed to the March 2021 decision. Thank you very much for your commitment and your patience. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Next is Denise Erkineff, followed by Nina Beattie, followed by David Ewing. Denise Erkineff, I'm having trouble finding you. Please raise your hand by pressing the button on your Zoom platform or dialing star 9. Nina Beattie, I believe you are on the phone. I will allow you to talk. Please unmute yourself. You may have to dial star 6 to unmute yourself.
This is Nina Beattie.
Two items. Last year, Monterey County approved the second of two lithium ion storage facilities in Moss Landing. In September, Vistra's facility, the largest in the world, overheated or caught fire, according to North Monterey County firefighters. And a source told me that the overheating or thermal runaway or fire was still ongoing as recently as mid-November with no end in sight and everyone waiting because lithium fires cannot be doused. Vistra provides little information. North Monterey County referred me to Vistra. There may be a cover-up going on this facility. Monterey County ignored the hazards of toxic lithium when they approved it. It's explosively flammable to water, air, and heat, and vulnerable to thermal runaway. These facilities are sited in the corrosive marine environment by the SLU in a tsunami and sea level rise and earthquake zone next to the power plant and Highway 1. These facilities must be halted and evaluated by the Commission for the devastating impacts and pollution to the ocean and marine environment. Secondly, the U.S. Navy last year and AT&T erected a 5G tower in Monterey on the beach in the coastal zone in the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary. There was no public process or environmental review. I request the Coastal Commission intervene for the public and the environment. In August 2020, when a similar AT&T 5G tower was activated in White Sands, New Mexico, for military exercises, many birds died in the area. Then in September, the Air Force held a 5G live fire drill with SpaceX, and birds started acting strangely, and researchers reported hundreds of thousands of birds, if not millions of migrating birds, dying. Researchers called this unprecedented. No one identified the military exercises as a probable cause, despite research on environmental impacts. I ask the commission to shut this down, to shut this 5G tower in Monterey down, pending a full environmental and public review with independent experts. Lastly, industrial wind energy is toxic to the environment. It will be devastating to the marine environment. Safe wind technologies may exist, but industrial wind is not safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is David Ewing. Please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm David Ewing from Venice. I'm here to ask three questions about local coastal programs. Section 30604 of the Coastal Act says that prior to certification of a local coastal program, coastal development permits may only be given to a proposed development that, quote, will not prejudice the ability of the local government to prepare a local coastal program that is in conformity with Chapter 3, close quote. My first question is, where and how is this prejudice defined? Second question is, does the Coastal Commission have a procedure in place for analyzing or evaluating whether such prejudicing of the LCP has in fact occurred in order to prevent further occurrences? The third question is whether there are any provisions for correcting a procedure that has resulted in the prejudicing of an LCP. The reason I ask these questions is that it seems to me the prejudicing of an LCP is often hard to evaluate for an individual project and only becomes apparent in the rearview mirror, so to speak, when the effects have accumulated, as Mr. Ainsworth has alluded to in the past regarding Venice. Can you please explore these questions? I thank you very much. And I'd also like to add my voice to Robin Rudisill's observations supporting enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final two speakers are Margaret Malloy and Suzanne Cumming, and then I will try one more time to locate the people we could not find before. Margaret Malloy, I'm having trouble promoting you to panelist, but well, please go ahead.
I submitted a slideshow. Is that available, please?
Yes, it's up right now.
Okay, thank you so much. So as you all know, Venice is the first intentional and only remaining Black coastal community in California, but actually on the entire West Coast of the US. That's a daunting issue and something that everybody must really try hard to stop the bleeding. We're memorializing former communities in Santa Monica and in Bruce Beach in Manhattan Beach, but many multi-generational residents still live in Venice. Can you please forward that slideshow? Yeah, thank you. This is First Baptist Church of Venice photo in 1911. Keep going, Billy, please. There they are. It's on the corner of 5th and San Juan in Venice. Keep going, please. This is the father of Arthur Rees, who was a really formative African-American resident of Venice and a visionary. He was known as the decorator-in-chief. He would have been a major art director if he was alive today, but, you know, relative to the times, this is the person who really completely changed the flavor of Venice of America. It's an unrecognized cultural and economic impact, as well as the lives and history and heritage. So please keep going, Billy. This is the 1927 First Baptist Church that was designed, one of the first commissions of Paul R. Williams. This is Mr. Rees. I mean, he just was the Wizard of Venice. Keep going, please. These are his designs. You know, he took all forms, all kinds of celebrations and Mardi Gras influences because he and his crew came from southern states and Louisiana. This was the opening of the First Baptist Church, the third life of the First Baptist Church in 1968 at 685 Westminster Avenue, where it sits today. There it is. It's the most iconic building in the Oakwood Black community. And 44 years of service, the city council designated Bishop E.L. Holmes Square on that location. The cornerstone told the history of the church and how it was paid in full, and they had a traditional mortgage burning ceremony in 1978. And so keep going, please. St. Venice is committed to raising this history. And, you know, as you implement the certified LCP and the environmental justice policy, this is the most impacted community on the entire coast. It's 1.1 square mile within a 3 square mile city known as Venice. Could you please just show the last slide? There are currently celebrations. Keep going just to the very end, please. There are Black History celebrations currently at the Venice Library and an event on the 19th. Please come.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Suzanne Cumming. Please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. My name is Suzanne Cumming. I'm speaking as an individual, a member of Defend Bayona, and as a resident of Mariners Village. First, I want to thank you and your staff for the decision to enhance the bottom of the Grand Canal Lagoon north of the Marina Del Rey jetty, fixing it for wading birds. And I want to speak on behalf of the Herons in Mariners Village. As you know, residents and others have worked for years to protect the heron rookery here, and it still needs protection. I would like to see heron cams on their nests so more people can enjoy these majestic birds. The herons feed in the Bayona wetlands. If the bulldozers come, their feeding grounds will be wiped out. The herons will be gone. The state certified restoration plan openly acknowledges extensive loss of critical wetlands habitats due to sea level rise. Please see pages 271 to 275 of the 1,242 page draft EIR. The wetlands will disappear. It will be mudflats. No herons, mudflats. Please support the General Alternative 20-point plan. There are a lot of thoughtful, great ideas here. It's a nature-based solution. We owe it to our children and grandchildren and future generations to protect these birds and this precious place. Thanks.
Thank you. Now we will go back to the people we could not find before. Please raise your hand if I call your name. If you're on the phone, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. We're looking for Aaliyah Adamski, Holly Martins, Ray Harmon, Frankie Arona, and Denise Erkenith. I've also found Matt Druno. I believe you're in as a panelist, so please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Is that to Madruno?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of my community in Fort Bragg in Northern California. It's in regards to the 272-acre Georgia Pacific Mill site, which was recently sold to the Mendocino Railway for $1.2 million. My concerns have to do with the toxic waste on site, which have caused cancers and birth defects in our community, and which is estimated to cost around $37 million to clean up. Our community needs your help to hold parties accountable. The following points weigh heavy on my family. Sea level rise in combination with king tides risk breaching the toxic ponds on site, which could drive these toxins up into our watershed. This sort of tide contaminated our watershed a few years ago with salt water, causing a regional water crisis for our community, households, and businesses. Because of the danger these toxic ponds pose, I request we be listed as a site of concern with the Coastal Commission's Toxic Tides Project. I'm also concerned that eminent domain was used to take over these 272 acres, which represents roughly one quarter of our Fort Bragg land area, one of the largest open coastal spaces remaining in California. For decades, this site's been neglected. I have seen signs around the mill site stating a $1,000 fine for littering. I ask, where is the sign that says Georgia Pacific can poison the community and not have to take any responsibility for their $37 million mess? The mission of the Coastal Commission is protecting and enhancing California's coast. You guys are committed to protecting and enhancing our coast and ocean for present and future generations. It does so through careful planning and regulation of environmentally sustainable development, rigorous use of science, strong public participation, education, and effective intergovernmental coordination. What an opportunity we have before us to put these words into action. Let's join together and share the honor of correcting this problem together. There's a Chinese proverb that states, unless you change direction, you will end up where you are headed. It's time to turn the tide. As a community, we need your help with testing on the mill site to determine the extent of the toxicity that remains. We need help investigating the selling off of this land. We need journalists and storytellers to share this story. And if this is allowed to happen, we need guarantee that they will be cleaning up this mess within a fixed time period. Thank you for what you do, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you. I see a phone number starting with 850 raising their hand. I'll allow you to talk to see if you are one of the members of the public who I called on. Please unmute yourself. You have to dial *6.
Hello. Good morning, commissioners.
Hi. I'm Michael. Go ahead. What is your name?
Michael Brackney of San Diego Housing Emergency Alliance.
Mr. Brackney, I don't see you on our speakers list. I'm sorry. We cannot take your testimony at this time. I also see John Leek raising your hand. I see that you are speaking twice on the same topic. So I believe that concludes our public testimony.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Great job. All right. With that, and thank you to members of the public for all of your statements. Are there any comments or questions from commissioners? Okay, seeing none, let's move on. Dr. Hucklebridge, North Coast report. First we have the consent calendar.
Correct. So the next item is item 6. Items moved from the regular calendar to the consent calendar for all units and districts on the agenda for today. There are 7 items from the North Coast, North Central, and Central Coast districts and the Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency Unit to consider today. And I'll run through those. Item 8A, time extension for commission action on an LCP amendment from Del Norte County to do a comprehensive update to the Crescent City Harbor segment. Item 10A, an amendment to an existing CDP for construction of a single family home that revises the size and design of the house, realigns and shortens the driveway, and adds native plant landscaping. Item 12A, a CDP to install and operate an oyster cultivation operation on approximately 27 acres of intertidal lands in Arcata Bay. Item 14A, an LCP amendment by the City of Half Moon Bay to revise its accessory dwelling unit provisions. Item 16A, an LCP amendment from Santa Cruz County to revise its wireless provisions. Item 16B, an LCP amendment from Santa Cruz County to update the safety element policies and corresponding implementing regulations, including for seismic and slope stability, grading, fire, and flood safety. And item 16C, consideration of the executive director's determination that new LCP provisions proposed by Santa Cruz County, allowing for waivers of CDP requirements subject to coastal protection criteria, are minor and the proposed amendment should be approved as submitted. For all these items, the applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendation, and we are not aware of any opposition related to these items and are thus recommending that these consent items be adopted per the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Dr. Hucklebridge. Any ex partes on any items on the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none. Carrie, do we, what? Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back up. Commissioner Rice.
Sorry, could not find the hand button. Good morning. I do have one ex parte on file for, and now I'm missing the number. It's the Hog Island item.
That's item 12A.
Yes. And it's on file. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for letting us know, Commissioner Wilson.
Likewise, I have ex parte from some months ago with relationship to Hog Island. And I believe I submitted something. I know I did, actually. I'm hoping that it made it into the record.
I saw Commissioner Rice's. Mr. Carl, is Commissioner Wilson's ex parte in the file?
That's actually with Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency. I would ask Amanda Cousard, do we have Commissioner Wilson's ex parte on file?
We do not, but please feel free to share that and we can add it to the file.
Okay, great. I'll do that. I'll make sure that it gets resent. But also, so while I don't have the date specific, I did have a boat ride with John Finger, one of the owners of Hog Island, to the site, to the location. We discussed the various issues associated with that area, which I'm also very familiar with. It's just a few miles from my house. Yeah, that was it. I mean, we just talked about their plans to have operations in this area. There was some concerns about buffer distances associated with eelgrass, which it seems like has been worked out. And so with that, I will make sure that I'll resend that if it hasn't already been put in there. It was months ago. It was before it was on our agenda. So.
Well, it's probably in a file somewhere, but it's right. Important for it to be posted. Commissioner Amanzada.
Yes, I just wanted to seek council guidance. I had a general conversation with Terry Sawyer with Hog Island about operations and their ability to work with Coastal Commission staff. We did not discuss this agenda item specifically. But during the course of our discussion on this, I will likely reference those conversations. So I just wanted to make it clear that the conversation happened on February 8th and was general in nature.
Okay. Any specific question about that? It sounds like you've disclosed it now.
I don't know that I have a question. I think it's arguably a gray area. So I just wanted to be transparent about it. We did not discuss specifics about this item, but we did talk generally about Hog Island's interactions with Coastal Commission. So I felt it better to disclose that.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. And Commissioner Amanzada, this item is on consent calendar. So if you want to make comments. All right. Commissioner Wilson, did you want to lower your hand or did you have another comment? Okay.
Right. I didn't have another comment, but I'm willing to make the motion.
Okay, well, let's hear and let's just check and see if there's any members of the public who wish to testify on any of the items on the consent calendar.
Yes, there is one member of the public who wishes to speak on item 12A.
All right, that person will have 3 minutes.
Okay, and we also have two of the applicants for 12A available for questions. So Richard James, I've promoted you to panelist. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Hi there, can you hear and see me okay?
Yes.
Great, my name is Richard James from custodian.org. I represent the billions of inhabitants that call Tomales Bay home, and as well as Humboldt Bay for this item. Item 12 is what I'm talking about. Commissioners, if someone uninitiated to the practices of the shellfish industry were to read the staff report, they might think that your agency is an overreaching bureaucracy and that there is no way anyone should be concerned about the environment in the public trust tidelands. I am initiated in the ways of the shellfish industry, and I assure you all that even though the report lays out precise operating rules that would appear to ensure the environment is protected from the shellfish industry, unless one visits these tidelands regularly, one's view is uninformed. The CDPs that cover four leases operated by this company in Tomales Bay contain similar conditions, yet the violent storms of this past October and December showed that nature will distribute unsecured gear far and wide. Thank you for Special Condition 12. It is needed and long overdue, given the broken, poorly managed, and questionably funded escrow cleanup fund all but forgotten by the Department of Fish and Wildlife Aquaculture Coordinator. Special Condition 3A speaks of storm damage and debris. Gear is still not being secured adequately down here in Tomales Bay, especially on work barges. Special Condition 3F mentions quarterly cleanups. The dates of these cleanups should be shared ahead of time with the public. I regularly see loose gear around leases throughout the year. How long until a cleanup effort will be by to pick it up? Will nature wash it out to sea or bury it in sediment and plant matter? Special Condition 2 speaks of an annual report. This report should be made available to the public. Thank you and your staff for taking your mission seriously. You set an excellent example for all state and federal agencies. And thank you for this time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. James. And that's it, Carrie, for public comment on all those items.
Yes.
Okay, bringing it back to the commission, are there Commissioner Gold? Any questions or comments?
Yes, thank you, Chair Brownsy. And this isn't being brought up to, you know, move this off of consent. It's just because I think it's just so, it's such an important issue. Talking about the Hog Island proposal and sustainable aquaculture. And I think the staff did an extraordinary job, especially in the measures and the conditions to protect aquatic life. I thought that that was really extraordinary. The work they did on eelgrass, you know, the depth of work in relation to the various different species of concern, including sturgeon, et cetera, I thought was great. One of the things that was not in there that I think is just sort of a provide more information moving forward. Director Ainsworth, maybe you have an idea whether this can work. There really is no reference to the aquaculture principles, which I think is pretty important to talk about how this proposal is consistent with those principles. I think this is really the first big aquaculture project that's being approved since those principles were completed by, you know, the participation of your agency as well as numerous other agencies. And so I think that would be quite helpful to talk about that consistency. But one thing that is not that of those principles that I think is given a little bit of short shrift in there, and maybe there's some way to put in explanation language in there, is the sixth principle on protecting public health and food safety. And I know that's not really in the major purview of the commission, but from the standpoint of you did, obviously your staff did talk to the various other different departments that have permitting responsibility for this. That summary was not included in there for Department of Public Health. They're very important to this whole thing. The area may or may not be somewhat prone to harmful algal blooms, which might be of some concern. And so just making sure that those issues are addressed, that there's adaptive management, working with DPH, where they obviously, their job is to make sure that there's food safety. Obviously, Hog Island has a long, very strong history on providing a safe product, but I think it's the sort of thing that really should be included in a report like this for a permitting decision like this. And so I just wanted to bring that up and just ask you if those, I think, really more informational amendments that don't really have an impact on the permit, if that's something that you can add to the final permit decision.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a weird noise. Commissioner Gold, we would certainly, particularly in the future, include the principles and whether or not these projects are complying with those principles. I think that's a really good suggestion. Of course, we've just kicked all this off, so we're trying to adjust to it. So I really appreciate the suggestion to do that, as well as the public health issues to cite that we have consulted with those agencies as well, that agency as well. Kate, anything I missed there?
No, I was just to agree with you, Jack. I think, thanks for the comments, Commissioner Gold. I think that, having a section in there talking about the principles and how projects are consistent with those is a good idea. We should have probably done it. And we, as Jack said, they're new and we're trying to figure out exactly how we interact. And that's a great suggestion that we can move forward in the future. I know we did a lot of outreach to multiple agencies on this to make sure we were kind of all on the same page, and including a little bit more discussion about those conversations, even if they're not directly related to a Coastal Act issue, could be useful. And I think we can definitely incorporate that. I don't know. I saw Cassidy come up. If you have anything to add. Nope. Okay. Then thank you for the suggestion. We'll definitely take that moving forward.
And just to follow up on Dr. Hucklebridge and Director Ainsworth and Mr. Teufel, is that in part of my ignorance on this, is there a history of the Coastal Commission when they permit these sorts of activities in looking at the harmful algal bloom impacts on a project from the standpoint of, your monitoring programs, when you operate, when you don't operate? Because you're incredibly detailed when it came to the protection of species of concern. As you know, a lot of the fisheries world on shellfish, not to mention Dungeness crab, is so focused on harmful algal blooms that, it was interesting to not really see that in there. And so I just didn't know the history, whether the thought was, because one can make the same argument that you went really far into species protection. So I just didn't know the norm, if you will, on dealing with HAB issues at this commission.
Cassidy, you want to jump in?
Yeah, thank you, Kate. And thank you for the question, Commissioner Gold. We do a pretty extensive level of coordination with our partners at Department of Public Health when we're reviewing applications like this one, both for the understanding that you were describing to make sure that we understand their kind of perspective about the proposed site and the proposed operation, to make sure that it's being proposed in an area that isn't at odds with what they're considering, make sure we understand the water quality classification of the area. And that is appropriate for the proposed use. We wouldn't want to bring forward a recommendation of approval of a project that's just going to run into issues with public health. And so that's kind of the basic motivation for it, to make sure we understand their process and their review. Additionally, I'd note, and this comes through in some of the conditions that we're recommending with this project and others as well. We want to make sure that we understand it. CDPH's needs in terms of water quality monitoring and shellfish monitoring programs, to ensure that we're not recommending any conditions that would prohibit those activities from occurring. And so that comes into play with conditions that apply to when sites are accessed, how frequently they're accessed, to ensure that those any kind of limitations that we're recommending still allows that necessary and important water quality and shellfish health monitoring to occur and not cause any issues with CDPH and their requirements. So hopefully that's helpful. I certainly take your comments to heart, and moving forward, we can do a more kind of extensive discussion of that in our staff reports. And so that level of coordination and those kind of considerations are more clearly laid out.
Thank you, Mr. Teufel. And I really hope there's at least some of all the stuff that you're saying you already did can be sort of added on to that, because you already did the work and you basically would just be explaining what you've already done. Just to the commission itself, and then I'll leave this item, is that I've become increasingly more concerned about this issue because the impacts of climate change on harmful algal bloom occurrence and frequency is just really changing at a pace that that we're doing everything we can to really keep track of. And so even, amazingly wonderful water quality like we have in this area where that's been demonstrated, we're seeing some places 5 years ago with similar sorts of occurrences just because they're downstream of rivers that are, are having big cyanobacteria blooms that are now, having occasional problems on water quality. So it is one of those things. That's why we monitor and really to keep track over time. And climate change definitely having a pretty significant impact on harmful algal bloom incidents and scope and scale. So thank you for hearing my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Gold. Very important issues, and thanks to our staff and overall consistency for doing the comprehensive report and reflecting the principles on aquaculture going forward. I think those were all good points. So thank you so much. Okay, with that, seeing no other questions or comments from commissioners, do three or more commissioners wish to remove an item from the consent calendar? Commissioner Wilson, I'm assuming you need a motion. Okay, all right, seeing none, Commissioner Wilson.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to approve consent, and I do want to speak to that motion.
Alrighty. Is there a second?
I'll second, Madam Chair.
Oh, thank you. Okay, Commissioner, moved by Commissioner Wilson, seconded by Commissioner Harmon. You're asking for an aye vote. Commissioner Wilson.
Yeah, I do want to reflect that this is pretty, I wouldn't say monumental, but it's definitely a step in the right direction in terms of getting an aquaculture project to a place where it's moving into consent, and that the parties involved have all come together and we're moving something forward. I do want to emphasize what Commissioner Gold was mentioning with relationship to the, in terms of the staff report, not having those aquaculture principles in there, but also even the Coastal Act policies that are promoting aquaculture as well. And I would say that we need to really emphasize that in these reports, because if you read these reports, you would imagine that it's almost not even a something that is in the Coastal Act as an activity that we encourage and want to see happen. And so I just feel like we're in an appropriate manner, and I feel like that's missing from the narrative that's in this report, because I have to tell you, if this was terrestrial agriculture, we would have those policies in there talking about the preservation and the encouragement of terrestrial agriculture, and to speaking to the water quality issues. So it's not just climate change, but really the agricultural activities that are terrestrial are probably what is creating the water quality issues that we're dealing with in the aquaculture. And the aquaculture is the canary in the coal mine associated with those issues that we have in water quality. And it's precisely this aquaculture industry that is sampling, that is litigating, that is, you know, for water quality in these spaces and driving these things to occur. So I just want to make sure that as we move forward, that we're really, you know, speaking about this in the same way that we would be speaking about other uses in that we promote in the Coastal Act as well. So, but with that, I'm glad we're where we're at. I just had to make my usual comment about this, and I'm happy to move forward. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Wilson. Commissioner Harmon, did you wish to speak to your second? Okay, Commissioner Amanzada.
I just wanted to completely echo what Commissioner Wilson said. I've worked with Hog Island for years, and they are an essential partner in preserving coastal habitat and doing innovative things like monitoring for ocean acidification impacts. Really treasure their partnership, and I'm happy to see this moving forward. Thanks.
You bet. Okay, with that, the makers of the motion are asking for an aye vote to approve the consent calendar. Ms. Miller, please call the roll.
Commissioner Amanzada.
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Commissioner Faustinos.
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Commissioner Escalante.
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon.
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart.
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice.
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga.
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Chair Brownsey.
Aye.
Brownsey, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. The consent calendar is adopted and approved. Okay, moving on to the next item, the North Coast Deputy Director's Report.
Thank you, Chair Brownsey. That brings us to item 7, the Deputy Director, report for North Coast District. There are 4 immaterial amendments and 1 time extension for your consideration today. Staff has not received any comments on these items, and we are not aware of any opposition. We are asking whether 3 or more commissioners object to any of the immaterial amendments or the time extension in the Deputy Director's Report.
Thank you, Dr. Hucklebridge. Are there any ex partes? Okay, seeing none, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on any of the items in the North Coast Deputy Director's Report?
Karen? No, but there's 1 applicant available for questions.
Okay, sounds good. And do 3 or more commissioners wish to remove an item on the Deputy Director's Report? Okay, seeing none, the Deputy Director's Report is approved. Okay, moving on, I believe, to item number 9, which is the new appeal.
Yes, thank you, Chair Brownsey. That brings us to item 9, a hearing to determine if a substantial issue is raised by an appeal of a CDP for a single family residence issued by Humboldt County. We do have a short presentation for this item. Billy, can you bring that up? Oh, there we go. Great. Thank you. So this project site is located on a coastal bluff above the Mad River in Humboldt County. It's immediately west of the California Redwood Coast Humboldt County Airport. Next slide, please. The county's approval authorizes the demolition of an existing approximately 3,000 square foot single family residence constructed in the 1980s. And authorizes construction of a new almost 10,000 square foot single family residence and related development, including a 1,700 square foot garage, 1,300 square foot swimming pool, and a 5,000 square foot outdoor recreational area, and as well as several other amenities. Next slide, please. The appeal raises 3 primary issues. 1, protection of ESHA. 2, compatibility with the certified land use and zoning designations for the site. And 3, visual resource protection, including views from the coastal trail, which is immediately adjacent to the property to the east. I will very briefly run through each of these issues. Next slide, please. Staff believes that the county's approval does not adequately avoid and protect rare plant ESHA. This area is known to support rare plants. However, the county did not require submittal of a botanical survey prior to approving the development. And further, the county's permit authorizes the removal and relocation of rare plants if they are discovered prior to construction. In addition, staff believes that the approved development is inconsistent with the permitted uses allowed in the residential zone where vacation rentals are not an allowable use. The county's approval authorizes an uncharacteristically large residence with extensive amenities, not commonly associated with residential development in the Humboldt County coastal zone, but more typically associated with commercial hotels and vacation rentals. And while the county could have removed any ambiguity about what is and is not permitted on this residential lot, it did not do so, leaving the door open for use of the site for transient commercial uses in the future, for example, by a future property owner. And finally, the appeal contends that the approved project is not sited or designed to protect public views or be visually compatible with the character of the surrounding area. Although the property is visible from both the Coastal Trail and Highway 101, the country's findings lack visual simulations or descriptions of design or materials to demonstrate visual compatibility with the character of the surrounding area. Next slide, please. Staff therefore recommends that the appeal raises substantial LCP conformity issues and that the commission take jurisdiction over the CDP application for the proposed project. So at this point, the question is whether three or more commissioners would like to debate the substantial issue question through a full hearing. If not, then substantial issue will be found and the de novo portion of the hearing will proceed at a future date. And that concludes staff's remarks.
Thank you, Dr. Hucklebridge, bringing it back to the commission. Are there any ex partes on this item? Okay, seeing none, do three or more commissioners wish to have a hearing on substantial issue? Okay, seeing none, substantial issue is found. This item will be scheduled in the future, as Dr. Hucklebridge mentioned, for the de novo hearing. Okay, it's virtually 10:30. Why don't we take a 15-minute break and that bio break, and then we'll come back. Yes, Dr. Hucklebridge?
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Chair Brownsey. I was hoping just really quickly before we break, I could take a quick minute to introduce and acknowledge the new deputy director for the North Coast District. Shanna Gray, who's joining us today.
Oh, thank you. I meant to do that. Oh my gosh.
No, it's, okay. This will be my last hearing representing the North Coast District. And although I am really sad to be giving up that role, I couldn't be more thrilled to be turning it over to the capable leadership of Shanna and Melissa Kramer, who I believe is also on as the new district manager. So I just want to take this moment and congratulate them and hereby officially pass the torch.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. Hucklebridge and Ms. Gray and Ms. Kramer. We really look forward to working with you closely in your new roles. We're thrilled at your promotions and look forward, as I said, to good things coming from the North Coast team. So thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Hucklebridge. And now, with those congratulations in mind, we'll break for 15 minutes, okay? Take care, everybody. Hi, let's see how many commissioners do we have. 2, 3, 4, 5.
I count 5.
Linda, are you there? Katie, are you there? Can't tell.
Oh, I counted her. I thought she was there.
Figured off. I think that's a photo though. So we need Linda, we need Mike, Megan.
It's interesting. You determine if you have a quorum based on whether you see people moving, I guess?
Well, because Linda and Katie both have good photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Hello.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Day 5. Welcome back, Sarah. Mike, Katie, Linda.
6. 6.
And 7. All right, 7.5. Because a little Jack. Okay, Welcome back, everyone, to the California Coastal Commission meeting. This is our February 11th hearing. We are now going to move to the energy, ocean, resources, and federal consistency items. So, Dr. Hucklebridge.
Thank you, Chair Brownzee. Item 11 is the Deputy Director's Report for Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency. There are two waivers for your consideration today. Staff has not received any comments on these items, and we are not aware of any opposition. We are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of the waivers in the Deputy Director's Report.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, does anyone have an ex parte on any of these items? Okay, seeing none, are there any members of the public who wish to comment on any of the items on this report?
No.
Okay, great. And then last, do any of the commissioners wish to remove an item, three or more commissioners? Okay, seeing none. All right, so we're looking for a motion. And I just want to ask, Mr. Khan, you have your hand up. Is it for this item, or is it, or is that just?
I think that's inadvertent.
Okay.
Sorry, Chief Brown.
Just wanted to check. Thought maybe there was something pressing. Okay. All right. With that, I'm looking for a motion.
I don't think we need a motion on this item. We're just looking for whether three or more commissioners object.
You are so right. Yes. It's Friday. So, with that, seeing no more, seeing no objection, the federal consistency report is adopted. Thank you, Dr. Hucklebridge. Moving, and then I think that's it, right?
Yes, that's it for energy.
Alrighty. Okay. Now we're going to move to North Central Coast. Mr. Carl.
That is correct. Thank you, Chair Brownzee. That takes us to item 13. That's the North Central Coast District Director's Report. Before I get started on reporting the items, just an update. We said we'd keep you updated regarding the City and County of San Francisco's efforts to develop a long-term solution to coastal hazard concerns in relation to their critical infrastructure at South Ocean Beach. And you'll recall that back in November, you extended their coastal permit deadlines for their long-term project to 2023, and you asked for quarterly updates. So here we are with that update. The latest is that they did distribute their draft environmental document for the project back in December, and they closed the comment period in January. Many, many comments received, including from commission staff. So they're working on that response to comments. That's going to take them some time. They're also working on preparing the additional supporting analyses for the coastal permit application. They're also doing ongoing outreach, including to NGOs and folks that haven't to date, you know, been supportive of some aspects of the project. So best as I can tell you right now, you know, everything's proceeding afoot. I think the commission just wanted to be aware if there were any kind of, you know, gumming up of the works here, but it seems to be moving along at about the pace that we thought it would, you know, at least at this point. And so unless there's any questions on that, I can move into the report.
All right. Any questions? Okay. Seeing none. Mr. Carl, why don't you proceed?
Yep, will do. So in the DD's report today, we're reporting one coastal permit waiver and one emergency coastal permit. We're not aware of any objections or controversy for the waiver, and it requires four more commissioners to object and remove the item from the DD's report. And so if that's not the case, then the commission will concur on the report.
Okay, any ex partes? Okay, seeing none, any members of the public, Carrie, wish to comment on the DD report?
No, there are not.
Okay, great. Are there any objections on any items from commissioners? Okay, seeing none, the deputy director's report is approved. And I think now we skip down to Central Coast DD report, right?
That is correct. Thank you, Chair Brownzee. We're down to item number 15, and that is the Central Coast DD's report. And today in that report, we're reporting one coastal permit waiver, one coastal permit extension, and two emergency coastal permits. We're also not aware of objections or controversy on those items, some of which take three commissioners and others four to remove from the DD's report. So we'll start by asking whether three or more commissioners would like to object to anything in the DD's report. And if not, again, then the commission will concur on it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Carl. Any ex partes? Okay, seeing none, any members of the public who wish to comment?
Gary? No.
Okay, great. And do three or more commissioners object to any of the items? Okay, I do have a comment. It's not an objection, but I just, one of the extensions was for a property, I think, that was between the ocean and the first public road. And again, this is the 13th time that this permit is extended. And so I did want to just raise a concern, not on this particular permit. I'm fine with this going forward at this time. But the question I have is in a particular subset of these extensions, because of sea level rise, should we be giving extensions that go 15, 20 years because conditions have changed? I just throw that out. I don't know if other commissioners share that concern or if staff share that concern. Mr. Ainsworth, if you could just briefly respond to this.
No, we certainly share that concern, and we're examining those extensions for just those issues, whether it's changed circumstances or not. Clearly, sea level rise and climate change is a huge change circumstance that we all have to wrap our heads around. So we will be doing that. Some of it gets down to some, you know, liner calls and whether or not it's priority for us. And, you know, I'm really trying hard to prioritize our workload given our heavy workload. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you. I totally understand that. I just worry that potentially, you know, we have a lot more protective conditions in our more recent, you know, the last, you know, 5 to 10 year permits. And I'm glad to hear that there is that sensitivity. And so I just wanted to raise that. Thank you. All right. Moving on, I think, Mr. Carl, we then go to, it looks like 16D.
Yes, that is correct, Chair Brownsey. We're down to item number 16D.
Let me just say, seeing no objection, the Deputy Director's report for the Central Coast is adopted. Okay, moving to 16. There you go.
Yes, thank you, Chair Brownsey. And I would just echo what Jack said about extensions. We do take that exercise seriously, including with this case. This is a project that's been around for some time. They're pretty well inland of the Bluff Edge, but your points are well taken. And we do, like I said, we take that seriously when we get these extension requests. So with that, yes, we do go down to item 16D. This is a San Luis Obispo County LCP amendment. I'd like to ask Esme Wall, who's the coastal planner, assign this item from the Central Coast office to give our presentation.
Good morning, commissioners. Item 16D is a San Luis Obispo County proposal to modify LCP provisions governing accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, one of which is shown under construction on slide one here. The changes primarily propose streamlined ADU review and permit processing and more lenient ADU development standards, for example, related to minimum parcel size, property line setbacks, and junior ADUs. The county also proposes to allow both an ADU and JADU on a single residential parcel, to allow for ADUs in several new land use categories, including agricultural and multifamily residential land use categories, and to eliminate off-street parking requirements for all ADUs. Next slide, please. While the changes proposed here are mostly straightforward and should help to facilitate ADU development in more developed areas that are able to accommodate them, it does not adequately account for certain geographically specific coastal resource issues and constraints that apply in parts of the county, particularly related to more rural and agricultural lands, water supply and public service capacities, and public access. In order to address these concerns, county and commission staff collaborated on suggested modifications designed to facilitate ADU development while avoiding significant resource degradation related to these issues. Next slide, please. With respect to the county's rural and agricultural lands, an example of which is shown in the images on slide three. As proposed, the amendment would allow ADUs without any of the review currently required in order to allow residential development on ag lands, where those provisions are designed to protect such lands and to avoid impairing agricultural use and productivity. The end result has the potential to lead to significant non-agricultural development that would be allowed to adversely impact agricultural lands and productivity. Fortunately, the existing LCP provides a roadmap to resolving these issues, since it already includes a series of prerequisites that are necessary to allow residential development on rural agricultural lands while ensuring agricultural protection. And these same standards can be applied to ADUs to offer the same level of protection. Next slide, please. In addition, as proposed, the amendment does not differentiate between areas with significant service constraints and those where infill development can likely be accommodated without significant coastal resource impacts. In particular, the lack of a sustainable water supply in Cambria and Los Osos, noted here in the image to the left on slide 4, is well known to the commission and the county. There, even existing water extractions to serve existing development have led to coastal resource degradation, including in terms of groundwater overdraft, seawater intrusion, fishery impacts, and ESHA damage, including to Santa Rosa Creek, pictured here to the bottom right on slide 4. And both communities continue to be designated at a level of severity 3 under the LCP in terms of water supply, meaning that the LCP designates these resources as overtapped. Due to these problems, new residential units in these communities can't be found LCP consistent because there's a lack of a sustainable water to serve them. And this would be just as true for ADUs in these communities. As such, suggested modifications are included to not allow for ADUs in Los Osos in Cambria until such constraints can be rectified, which is expressly allowed for by state ADU law when confronted with these types of service and resource constraints. Next slide, please. And finally, the proposed amendment broadly eliminates off-street parking requirements for ADUs, but doesn't differentiate between areas where this is unlikely to lead to significant public access impacts versus where it is. In particular, the county's coastline is home to a number of very popular visitor destinations, where on-street parking along the shoreline is a key part of the available parking supply for many visitors. It is often the only available way to access the coast. The images on slide 5 show such a parking-strapped area near the shoreline in Cayucas, which is a popular visitor destination. Fortunately, and it has been done in a number of other LCPs across the state, these issues are readily addressed by honing in on the specific areas where an on-street parking access is particularly important in requiring off-street parking for those areas, but not others. On this point, and in response to good points raised in correspondence received, the addendum also makes clear that JADUs do not require an off-street parking space. Next slide, please. As modified, the result is a set of LCP provisions that will both protect coastal resources and lead to an increase in ADUs, and by an extension, an increase in housing stock. And the approach taken here is similar to and consistent with the manner in which the commission has addressed these issues in other ADU LCP amendments, of which there have been more than a half dozen on just the Central Coast in the past year or so. County and commission staff are in agreement on the suggested modification language. Thus, staff recommends that the commission approve the amendment with the suggested modifications, and the motions and resolutions to do so, there are 3 of them, are found on pages 6 and 7 of the staff report. This concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Wall. Appreciate that. Are there any ex partes on this item? Okay, seeing none. Do we have a representative, Carrie, from the county?
We do. Erlyn Singewald would like to speak. They are now in as a panelist.
Thank you, Chairperson Brownsey and commissioners. My name is Erlyn Singewald. I am a planning division manager with the County of San Luis Obispo. I oversee the long-range planning section.
Singewald, if I could just interrupt you for a second, how much time are you going to need?
Only less than 2 minutes.
Okay, sounds great. Please proceed.
Thank you. I would just like to provide a little bit of background and context on this proposed LCP amendment. So addressing the county's affordable housing needs is a top priority for our Board of Supervisors. ADU development is a major component of the county's roadmap to meeting affordable housing needs for all of its residents. In Los Osos, in particular, ADUs are required to offset their water demand on a 2-to-1 basis for the county's retrofit to build program. This means that any ADU built in Los Osos would actually reduce water demands on the groundwater basin, or at a minimum, would not be expected to increase demand on the basin. You know, we do understand that some members of the community have questioned the effectiveness of that retrofit to build program to offset the impacts of redevelopment on the groundwater basin. And in order to address these questions, we have engaged a consultant to analyze our retrofit to build program and make recommendations to build more confidence in the community and among the water purveyors in the retrofit to build program. I want to point out that we are meeting regularly and working very collaboratively with the three Los Sotos water purveyors on an adaptive management approach to allowing sustainable development in Los Sotos. Those discussions will ultimately culminate in the Los Sotos community plan coming forward to your commission. And with all that said, we really appreciate your staff's work. We've worked very closely with Coastal Commission staff on the proposed suggested modifications. And we do recognize the need at this time to put a pause on ADUs in Los Sotos and Cambria while we continue to study and make progress on addressing water supply constraints in Los Sotos and Cambria. So those are my remarks, and I'm available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Singelwald. Really appreciate that. Carrie, are there how many people do we have for public comment?
There are four people.
Four? Okay. We'll give them 3 minutes apiece.
Okay, great. For members of the public, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload and this will take a moment. Please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. And when it is your turn to speak, we'll invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. After your time is up, you'll be moved back to attendee mode. So first up is Patrick McGibney. I'll move you to panelists now. After Patrick McGibney, we have Jeff Edwards, followed by Eve Gruntfest, followed by Lindy Dowd. Patrick McGibney, it looks like you are in as a panelist. Please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and begin.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, commissioners. I am Patrick McGibney, the chair of the Los Sotos Sustainability Group. In writing the CDP for the Los Sotos Wastewater Project, you cited Condition 6, which prohibited additional building within the prohibition zone on undeveloped properties until conclusive evidence of a sustainable water supply could be shown. Your concern was that the water basin, after 40 years of overdraft, was not sustainable. We do have a basin plan and a basin management committee to implement that plan, but after 7 years, neither are working to stabilize and save our basin from seawater intrusion. Yet our county continues to process applications and issue building permits for additional building over our overdrafted water basin. Not all of these permits are in the prohibition zone, but all are over our water basin. What would be helpful? What would save this commission from listening to all of our appeals, the staff from having to write countless reports, and from us having to fight our county, would be for this commission to prohibit all new development over the Los Sotos water basin that has the potential for additional water use until our basin can be shown with conclusive evidence that it's sustainable. The amendment you're considering today will prohibit ADUs within the imperiled Los Sotos Cambria coastal zone to help protect this valuable resource. The county realizes this and is recommending applicants apply for guest houses instead, knowing that they have no oversight and can be easily transformed into an ADU after the fact. Home offices, which will be coming next, can also be easily altered after the fact. And these too will be appealed. We ask for your diligence on this. And we do like what the Coastal Commission staff has been doing and appreciate all of their hard work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next is Jeff Edwards. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chairwoman Brownsey and commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 40-year resident of Los Sotos and wish to speak to your staff report on this item and the discussion of water in Los Sotos. Unfortunately, staff has crafted a misleading and false narrative regarding water resources, water quality, and quantity in particular. With regard to water quality, the community of Los Sotos has spent over $200 million in 2014 for a wastewater treatment facility. This was to address nitrates in the groundwater, and they are improving. With respect to water availability, please consider the following facts. One, Los Osos saw peak water demand in 1988 at 2,560 acre feet. Since 1988, demand has declined by 58% to 1,063 acre feet. Since 2010, when the wastewater treatment project was approved by the Coastal Commission, there's been a 33% reduction in urban demand for water from 1,620 acre feet to 1,063 acre feet. During this last 30 years, the population has been constant in Los Osos, about 14,000 people, a little bit more now, 14,400. So the residential water demand indoors and outdoors is currently at about 65 to 70 gallons per capita per day. The goal for our urban users is between 50 and 55 gallons per day per person, indoor and outdoor. And with that, we are likely to drop below 1,000 acre feet per year for urban users. The basin is not in overdraft. You may have heard that or read it in the staff report. Our total demand is substantially less than the safe yield of our basin. The staff report fails to mention the robust Title 19 retrofit to build program in the County of San Luis Obispo. At a 2-to-1 ratio of savings to demand, this represents water neutral development. So any assertions that these projects are adding water use is simply misplaced. In a planning version of a Hail Mary, your staff, without any evidence, has asserted that water limitations in Los Osos are having deleterious effects on wetlands and other habitats. Another fiction. Please allow ADUs in Los Osos, but reinforce the retrofit requirement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Eve Grundfest. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Hi, I'm Eve Grundfest. I bring to your attention a reason for needed changes in the language of the ADU amendment and a reason for a delay in your review and approval of this amendment. I also want to be on the record that I 180 degrees disagree with the last speaker and agree with Patrick McGibney. The staff report in part justifies the proposed ban on ADUs in Los Osos because the county's resource management system currently designates Los Osos groundwater supply a level of severity 3, which the report explains clearly and explicitly on page 24 as the maximum safe yield of the basin has been met or exceeded and requires intervention to protect public safety and environment for the people who are here now. The county's resource management system has designated Los Osos at a level severity 3 since 2007. The county has allowed more building in Los Osos. The county has taken no adequate action to address seawater intrusion, another problem. The county's resource management system does not rely on actual empirical data in reaching its conclusions. It relies on the basin model, whose predictions and assessments, including its projected basin safe yield, have not been verified by monitoring data, and as the Basin Management Committee has acknowledged, remain highly uncertain. Owing to these acknowledged uncertainties, the Basin Management Committee staff has urged that the basin model must be updated and its basic assumptions and predictions must be reevaluated through a peer-reviewed process. Accordingly, it's important that any reconsideration of the ban on ADUs in Los Osos not be linked with the county's resource management system designations, as those designations are not based on conclusive evidence as required by the Coastal Commission. Any future reconsideration of the ban on ADUs in Los Osos should not be linked directly to the BMC's projection of safe yield of the basin. Basin Management Committee's current projections of safe yield are inherently unreliable since, as I said, they are based on solely predictions of a model that the Basin Management Committee itself has acknowledged as unreliable and must be recalibrated and reevaluated. Thank you to the Coastal Commission staff for the comprehensive appreciation of the severity of our groundwater limitations, even for the current residents of Los Osos.
Thank you. Our final speaker is Lindy Dowd. Please unmute yourself and begin.
Thank you. This is Lindy Dowd, a longtime resident of Los Osos, almost 50 years. I generally support the staff report with some important modifications to strengthen the Los Osos exception and urge the commission to adopt ADU amendment language that unequivocally links any reconsideration of that ban on ADUs in Los Osos to conclusive evidence that any new development would not harm the groundwater supply and the biological systems that rely on it. Pages 21 and 22 of the staff report state that unless and until the EAP, Estero Area Plan, is updated to identify appropriate and sustainable development parameters, which it currently has not been, new residential unit development is not allowed to connect to the Los Osos Wastewater Project, cannot satisfy wastewater needs, and thus is not currently allowable under the LCP. Footnote 11 states that the vast majority of the community is under a Regional Water Quality Control Board septic prohibition ban, and thus septic is likewise not allowable to satisfy such wastewater needs. This idea that future new development is only possible in areas served by that wastewater project because new development cannot rely on new septic systems is not entirely accurate. The county continues permit development outside the prohibition zone using septic systems that flow into the groundwater basin and water from that same basin. And the county recently received Water Board approval to administer a local area management plan. Thus, the county could approve new development outside the Los Osos Wastewater Project, irrespective of an Estero Area Plan update, if the ban on ADUs in Los Osos is tied to the availability of sewer capacity. CDP Condition 6, however, allows for no such exception. Please adopt the language that links any new development over the entire Los Osos Basin to conclusive evidence of sustainability, not to Los Osos Wastewater Project connectability or pressure from developers or the county. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That concludes public comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Carrie. All right. Bringing it back to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few comments. With respect to Mr. Edwards' comments, water demand in Los Osos may have been reduced over the years, but the evidence that we've reviewed shows that water supply is still overtapped. We stand by the analysis that we've provided you in the staff report. And we don't believe that retrofits on a case-by-case basis can actually change that at a basin level. To Mr. McGibney and others who suggest that this amendment ought to go beyond prohibiting ADUs in Los Osos to also guest houses and, you know, really anything that uses water, obviously that's something we could help craft. That's something the commission wants to discuss, and that's where the commission heads. I can note in advance that that's something that the county is not supportive of. And I'd also highlight that at least for Los Osos, there is a Los Osos community plan that is pending, is hopefully going to be heard by this commission in the next several months. And the purpose of that plan, it emanates from the wastewater treatment plant coastal permit that was referenced, where there's a requirement for an update, which is intended to, you know, provide the growth limits that are related to water supply, wastewater, and also ESHA in relation to a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, HCP. So all of that is kind of bundled up in the Los Osos Community Plan, and that effort will, in our view, help to define what's going to be appropriate and not moving forward. So it may not be, you know, this may not be the juncture that's appropriate to do these types of things within this amendment. And like I said, the county is not supportive of that. I can, you know, Mr. Singwall could speak to that himself, but I know that to be a fact. So with that, we're available for questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Singwall, do you just want to take a minute to respond?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. I'll just really focus my response on, as Mr. Carl was saying, you know, the comment that perhaps the prohibition on development should be expanded beyond ADUs and include guest houses and other types of water uses and development. As Mr. Carl said, the ordinance before the commission this morning is the AV ordinance. It does not involve guest houses or other types of development in Los Osos. The ordinance that our Board of Supervisors adopted, and that's before you, is and focused on strictly ADUs. I think it's important to note that our main goal of this ordinance is to comply with state ADU law, as well as, of course, harmonize ADU law with our coastal plan and the Coastal Act. And we've been in this kind of state of gray area where there's not a lot of clarity and predictability about the requirements for ADUs in the coastal zone. And this ADU ordinance is an opportunity to clarify that. As Mr. Carl said, there will be an opportunity in the future to, on the Los Osos community plan, to have that broader discussion about water supply availability and development in Los Osos. But at this time, we're not supportive of expanding the scope of the ADU ordinance to include guest houses or other types of development. I think if the commission is interested in going in that direction, what we would ask for is to get direction for us to explore that as a separate LCP amendment, but not to tie it to the ADU ordinance. I feel if it is tied to the ADU ordinance, that could really impede our progress in certifying this LCP amendment, and then we would remain in that gray area where there is confusion about what the actual rules are that apply. And I don't think that will help any of us out.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Singewald. I'm gonna close the public hearing, bring it back to the commission. Commissioner questions or comments, Commissioner Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Brownsey. And my comments or questions revolve around ADUs on ag lands and not so much the water part. So if we want to adjudicate the water part of this first, that's fine. But my focus is on the ag section of this.
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. So I heard what staff said about the ADUs and on the Central Coast, but on the North Coast, when we did this, and this commission, I think, approved for maybe it was Mendocino, and I think we're still working on Humboldt County, actually much better protections with relationship to ag uses and ag properties. So what I don't see in here, it just says basically it protects agricultural soils, I imagine, or agricultural uses on ag properties. But that's only one element that needs, for protection. So what we have done in the North Coast is we have required like using the same driveway, proximity to the original house, because what could happen is, say my screen is 40 acres and you have a house in one corner of your ag property, you can have then an accessory dwelling unit over here, separate driveway, separate septic system. Fragmentation of the landscape could really happen in this way. And it's not really that protection isn't enumerated. At least I can't see it in the materials that were provided here. And so can staff reference that?
I can speak to that quickly, and then maybe I'll pass it to Ms. Waller or Mr. Khan, who know more about this particular LCP. But the concepts that you just described, Commissioner Wilson, they are embodied in the LCP currently with respect to any sort of residential or other non-agricultural development on agricultural properties. So, for example, your comment about making sure that these things are contiguous and confined in a particular area, there's a whole slew of policies specific to that exact question. So this LCP is actually quite strong with respect to where development can be sited on agricultural lands. And so we're relying on that, including the findings that are required to support residential uses.
Thank you, Mr. Carl. I thought I read through this. So can you point to me, am I missing it? Is it in the report?
It's described in the report, but really it's in the rest of the LCP. So we didn't provide you the agricultural policies. Maybe we should have, but that's not part of our report. But that's what I was describing about what the LCP says in relation to agricultural protection.
Okay, then I apologize. Then I didn't have all of it necessarily. So I really appreciate the explanation, and I'm satisfied. If you feel like it's as protective as what we've done on the North Coast, then I feel good about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Wilson. Those were all really good points, and I'm glad that you got that clarification. Are there any other, Vice Chair Hart.
Thank you, Chair Brownzee. I just want to express my appreciation for staff, the approach that they took in this. And I, of course, completely agree with the exclusion of the areas and protection of coastal access and obviously the water issues and portions of the county. But I have a question with regard to protection for ADUs and agricultural areas. And I was wondering, Mr. Carl, if you could also comment on protection of areas of high natural resource value or biodiversity value, how those are being protected with the expansion of ADUs, if at all, in this proposal.
Well, I think similar to a lot of ADU ordinances, they don't undo the LCP protections that apply for example, for ESHA and riparian corridors and setbacks from wetlands, et cetera. Those provisions apply to ADUs in the same way they apply to all development in the county. And so, you know, we've made clear, and I'm not sure how clear we made it in this LCP amendment, but those policies continue to apply. And so, whereas in the agricultural zone, if we didn't make these, you know, specific requirements, it wasn't clear that this use would have to make those same findings. So that's why we did it there. But the rest of the LCP would continue to protect ESHA, you know, wetlands and that sort of thing in the same way that it does against, you know, any sort of development impacting those resources.
Yeah, I think that that's the, for myself and also for Commissioner Wilson, part of the problem is we're not reading the entire LCP, seeing all of those protections. So that's good to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hart. Again, important points for clarification. Okay, not seeing any more questions or comments. Is there a motion? And the motions, there are four motions. And they start on page 6. Anyone?
I'm happy to make the motions.
Thank you.
We'll pull up page 6. Sorry, 1 second. All right. So the first motion, move the commission certify land use plan amendment LCP 3 SLO 200592 as submitted by San Luis Obispo County. And I recommend a yes vote. This is on the LUP.
That's correct.
Second.
Okay. And who's second? Amanzada. Okay. Moved by Vice Chair Hart, seconded by Amanzada to approve the LUP as submitted. Do either of you wish to speak to your motion?
No.
Nope. Okay. The makers of the motion are asking for an aye vote. Okay, Ms. Miller.
Commissioner Faustinos?
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Radanga?
Aye.
Radanga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amanzada?
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Chair Brownzee?
Aye.
Brownzee, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. The LUP as submitted is approved. Okay, next motion, Vice Chair.
Thank you. I move that the Commission reject implementation plan amendment number LCP 3 SLO 200592 as submitted by San Luis Obispo County, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Vice Chair Hart, seconded by Commissioner Amanzada. The makers of the motion are asking for an aye vote. Ms. Miller, please call the roll.
Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amenzada?
Yes.
Amenzada, yes. Commissioner Faustinos?
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Chair Brownzee?
Aye.
Brownzee, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. The motion is approved. Next motion, Vice Chair.
Move that the Commission certify Implementation Plan Amendment Number LCP3 SLO 2000592 as submitted by San Luis Obispo County, if it is modified as suggested in this staff report, and I'm recommending a yes vote.
All right.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Vice Chair Hart, seconded by Commissioner Amenzada to approve the implementation plan amendment as modified by staff. The makers of the motion are asking for an aye vote. Ms. Miller?
Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amenzada?
Yes.
Amenzada, yes. Commissioner Faustinos?
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Chair Brownzee?
Aye.
Brownzee, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. The implementation plan amended as modified by staff is approved. Last motion, Vice Chair Hart?
No, sorry, Chair Brownzee, there were three motions. The LUP was as submitted.
So. Oh, okay, got it. Okay, so we're done. Okay, excellent, thank you. I had four motions. There you go. I got excited about all those motions. All right, moving on. Ms. Wolf, thank you very much for your presentation. Good job. And then we're moving on to the next item, which is the, isn't this the short-term rental policy for Los Osos?
Yes.
Yes, item 16E, that is the vacation rentals in Los Osos item. And Ms. Wall, again, is going to give our staff presentation.
All right, please proceed.
All right. Item 16E is a proposed San Luis Obispo County LCP amendment designed to add vacation rental requirements specific to the unincorporated community of Los Osos, which is located adjacent to Morro Bay and shown in the foreground on slide one. The LCP currently allows vacation rentals throughout the county's coastal zone, including Los Osos, and has specific requirements applicable to the unincorporated communities of Cayucas, Cambria, and Avila Beach. These requirements include good neighbor operational standards as well as density limits so as not to oversaturate particular neighborhoods or blocks with vacation rentals. This proposed amendment would add these same types of general operational standards as well as buffer and cap limits for Los Osos. As proposed, these limits include a 55-unit cap on full home vacation rentals and a 500-foot buffer between vacation rentals and other vacation rentals, as well as between other overnight accommodations, such as hotels, motels, bed and breakfasts, and home shares. Next slide, please. The proposed amendments, 55-unit cap and 500-foot buffer requirements are significantly more limiting than the vacation rental rules that apply to other areas of the county and raise some concerns with respect to conformance with land use plan requirements to maximize public recreational access and prioritize visitor accommodations. In evaluating these concerns, including in light of comments received from interested parties, a number of issues were identified. The main concerns relate to various issues that emanate from the buffer provisions. Specifically, the 500-foot buffer would apply to all types of visitor accommodations and are not focused on the actual buffer objective, which is to avoid oversaturation of whole house vacation rentals in the community. The unintended consequence is to severely limit where a vacation rental may be allowed, as shown in slide two. And this is exacerbated by applying the buffer to other overnight accommodations, including home shares, shown in orange on the map, which is a type of short-term rental where folks rent a room or two in a house that is occupied by the long-term resident. This then gives rise to concern that folks could use the lesser process of becoming a home share to eliminate vacation rentals within a 500-foot radius. Fortunately, these issues can be addressed by ensuring that buffers are applied between full home vacation rentals only, and not between vacation rentals and these other forms of accommodations. Next slide, please. As to permit blocking, this refers to folks who might acquire a vacation rental permit within the cap, but never offer a rental, thus blocking others from obtaining a permit and never providing a rental. One way this has been addressed in some other LCP contexts has been through use it or lose it provisions that require vacation rentals to be offered for vacation use up to some minimum amount as a requirement of the permit. For example, using the proxy of a minimum TOT payment. Here, the county doesn't have evidence that permit blocking has been a problem, including as the vacation rental permitting process is a robust CDP process that is likely to dissuade such potential maneuvers. For now, the county has committed to tracking vacation rental usage over time to see if a subsequent LCP change would be warranted to ensure that such blocking schemes do not occur. Thus, while the 55-unit cap and 500-foot buffer as proposed raise some concerns that they would result in a dearth of really any available vacation rentals in Los Osos, the suggested mods help to alleviate these concerns. And to be clear, it only does so in a way that accommodates a limited amount of vacation rentals overall as befits the demand in Los Osos, where there are currently about 39 such rentals today. And these limits also help to address the fact that development options are severely limited in Los Osos, primarily due to water supply issues, and thus strikes an appropriate balance. Staff works closely with county staff on the suggested modifications, and the county is in agreement with them. Next slide, please. So while it can be difficult to find an appropriate balance between providing an important visitor-serving function and protecting communities and their character, as well as housing opportunities and coastal resources, staff believes that the as-modified LCP amendment has found that balance given Los Osos' unique context. And as I indicated earlier, we worked closely with county staff on the suggested modifications, and they are in agreement with them. We recommend that the commission approve the amendment with the suggested modifications, and the motions to do so, there are two of them, are found on page 6 of the staff report. That concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Wall. Good job. Are there any ex partes on this issue? Okay. Commissioner Harmon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 7th at 9:30 in the morning via Zoom, I met for exactly 29 minutes with SLOCAL, Chuck Davison, Tracy Campbell, Adam Zarin, and representatives of the short-term rental owner community, Jeff Edwards and Tony LeGraw. They communicated to me that they have no firm position and are generally supportive of the first modification, neutral on the second, but they do want to ensure a fair playing field across the county. And they reference concerns related to the cap and the buffer as compared to neighboring communities. They also brought up that they were concerned with the outreach and would like to see this item continued so further refinements could be made. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. With that, we'll move and to the public part of this hearing. Carrie, is there a representative of the county who is here to speak on this item?
Yes, Erlyn Singewald will speak for this item as well.
Okay, Mr. Singewald, how much time are you going to need?
Less than a minute.
Okay, take it away.
Thank you. Yeah, so Erlyn Singewald, again, Planning Division Manager for Long Range Planning and Housing with the County of San Luis Obispo. Good morning again, Chairperson Brownsey, Commissioners. So the comments I really want to emphasize on this ordinance is that it truly is a great example of a grassroots effort by the community. The ordinance was originally conceived and brought forward by the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And we worked extensively with the community to develop this ordinance. Of course, the goals of the ordinance are to, I would say, twofold. One is to preserve the limited supply of workforce housing in Los Osos. Los Osos is unique in that it has historically provided workforce housing for the neighboring communities of San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, which are generally more expensive communities that have significant jobs, and Los Osos has really provided that source of workforce housing for those neighboring communities. And then the other benefit of the ordinance that really helped bring it forward is just the idea of how it protects the residential neighborhoods of Los Osos. Los Osos is a coastal community that is still predominantly residential. It doesn't have the same level of infrastructure and services to support a tourism economy compared to other coastal communities. So that's some additional background on the ordinance. We appreciate your staff's work on this. And as staff presented, we are in agreement with the suggested modifications.
Great, thanks, Mr. Singewald. Carrie, how many public speakers do we have?
We have 10.
Okay, so we're gonna give everybody 2 minutes. So please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a reminder to members of the public, we will bring you in as panelists and your Zoom will reload when we do so. Please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to attendee mode. First up, we have Adam Zarin. I'll promote you to panelist now. This will take a moment. After that, we'll have Trish Bartel, followed by Jeff Edwards, followed by Tony LaGrosse. Trish Bartel, I'm having trouble finding you. Please raise your hand if you are here by pressing the button in Zoom, or if you're on the phone, dial *9. Adam Zarin, it looks like you are now in as panelists. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Brownsey, the commission and staff. My name is Adam Zarin. I'm the Senior Director of Public Policy and Advocacy for Visit SloCal. Visit SloCal is the countywide destination management and advocacy organization for San Luis Obispo County, also known as SloCal. We represent more than 3,000 lodging properties, including hotels, motels, bed and breakfasts, RV parks, and vacation rentals. And just for context, our region in the travel and tourism industry provided over $2 billion in local investments, community investments last year. We really want all of our investors to be treated equally and fairly across all jurisdictions. We have no firm position on the proposed modifications, but would ask the commission to consider laying over this matter to a future meeting because of to allow for additional conversations between staff and the community, as our investors and partners will identify later on this call as well. Again, we really strive for fairness, equality, and consistency. And those are our major concerns or significant concerns with the proposed ordinance. The 500-foot buffer, for example, which the commission identified is more restrictive than neighboring communities, is not in alignment with our other communities like Avila Beach, Cayucas, and Cambria. The same is true for the cap on vacation rentals themselves, and the requirement for a minor use permit is new when compared to other parts of the coastal zone in the county. In addition, on the new signage, we would like just to for the commission to consider to apply that new requirement equally across all areas of public accommodation like libraries and hotels. Restaurants. We just want to make sure that everyone has to maintain the same standard. So with that, we really appreciate the commission taking the time to listen to our concerns, and we invite an opportunity to be a good convener and facilitator of conversations. And again, thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jeff Edwards. Please state your name for the record and begin.
I do have a PowerPoint. They're excellent. Thank you. Good day again, Madam Chairwoman and Commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. Los Osos and Baywood Park are very much in demand by visitors, especially for the passive recreation opportunities that are available here. Next slide, please. Your staff has offered up this 500-foot distance standard as a suggested modification, and I would submit to you that it helps, but it still allows for a significant imbalance. Next slide, please. This shows 39 STRs in Los Osos and their distribution. Actually, as of Monday, there are 45 short-term rentals licensed in Los Osos. Next slide, please. Of which I might note half don't get rented at all. A quick comparison of neighboring communities in Morro Bay and Los Osos. You can see that Los Osos has a substantially larger population than Morro Bay. Morro Bay has over 900 hotel and motel rooms. Los Osos has less than 100. The short-term rentals in Los Osos, I mentioned now today, 45 versus 168 in Morro Bay. And the cap, 55 versus 175, clearly different. And Morro Bay does have a use it or lose it provision. Next slide, please. We have, in essence, 20 short-term rentals in Los Osos. Please exercise your duties under the Coastal Act to protect these opportunities. Next slide, please. Vacation rentals are affordable for families. And Baywood Park in Los Osos wishes to be more than a bedroom community. People, we don't want them driving back and forth from Morro Bay to Los Osos and creating additional greenhouse gases. And then lastly, you've heard about an extensive public outreach. That is a complete misstatement. This was a ordinance crafted by a few and passed by just a handful more. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Tony LaGrasse. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning. My name is Tony LaGrasse. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. My name is Tony LaGrasse. I've been operating a vacation rental business for the last 20 years and have a lot of experience looking at ordinances and listening to community as well as businesses. I'm really happy to see the development of an ordinance for Los Osos, although I think this one has a few glaring issues that still need to be worked out. Number one is the application fee for most other communities in the coastal area runs less than $400 if they meet all the other distance standards and all the other criteria for the ordinance. This ordinance leaves in the requirement of a minor use permit, which is probably about $5,000, and requires county staff to review every single application. I believe this is very unfair for every applicant. It doesn't have a level playing field for other communities. So I would like to see the MUP requirement eliminated and to have it be more appropriate and consistent with other application licensing protocols in our county. That alone is a huge barrier for most applicants, even if they meet all the other standards. Number two, the cap of 55 without a lose it or use it requirement, I believe, is unfair. I heard that you said there's no evidence that people are holding licenses and not use them. I beg to differ. I have been tracking that for over 10 years, and that number of people who hold licenses to block other people has grown. There's plenty of evidence, and no one just appears to be looking for the evidence, but that anyone wants to look at it. So I believe if there is going to be a cap, thank you for listening.
Thank you. Next is Lynette Tornatsky, followed by Sue Morgenthaler, followed by Maggie Jurin. Lynette Tornatsky, please unmute yourself and begin.
Hello, my name is Lynette Tornatsky. I live in Los Osos, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm asking you to consider delaying your vote on vacation rentals. I don't see how the 500-foot buffer zone between vacation rentals requirement is equitable. Not all lots are the same size. There are many one-acre lots. Cabrillo Estates, for instance, the average lot is 12,500 square feet. The largest is 27,500 square feet. In the Baywood area, many lots have a 25-foot or a 50-foot frontage. The 25-foot lots are 3,125 square feet. The 50-foot lots are 6,250 square feet. There's 8 to 12 houses per acre. So when you draw a 500-foot radius around one vacation rental in Baywood, many more people are denied the right to have a vacation rental, which may be a way for them to keep their house or better maintain their property. Obviously, far less people in the larger lot areas are affected by the 500-foot radius, and this is really unfair. Also, not everyone wishing to visit the Central Coast can afford the large 4 or 5 bedroom vacation rentals. The smaller homes on the smaller lots would serve that demographic. They could afford that. So I'm asking you to please revisit the 500 foot radius or explain today why it is fair to treat the residents on the small lots the same as those on the larger lots. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Sue Morgan-Haler. Please unmute yourself and begin.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Sue Morgan-Thaler, a resident of Los Osos and a member of the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And I do have permission to speak on their behalf as our chair, Trish Bartel, was called away on a family emergency. I'd like to start by thanking Mr. Kahn and Ms. Wall for their excellent staff report. They understand what we tried to accomplish with this ordinance, and we appreciate that they recognize it makes sense for Los Osos. In response to urgent requests from the community, the Los Osos Community Advisory Council conducted nearly a year of meetings, discussions, and workshops with the public to create a set of guidelines to regulate vacation rentals. The goal was to strike a good balance between honoring and respecting coastal access while preserving a unique community and its fragile resources. Everyone had equal opportunity to participate and be represented. In developing this ordinance, we specifically looked at the neighboring communities of Morro Bay, Avila Beach, Cayucas, and Cambria. These towns are now overwhelmed by vacation rentals and their communities have been fractured. Los Osos has the opportunity to be proactive, to preserve its neighborhoods with newer standards by which to judge vacation rentals. Besides promoting a better balance between visitors and residents, the buffer in this ordinance honors coastal access and promotes equity by dispersing vacation rentals into different areas of town, making homes available to visitors at all economic levels. Because of a building moratorium, the ordinance and its cap recognizes our inability to replace a home and the family we lose from our community each time a house isn't converted to a vacation rental. We thank your staff for all the research, consideration, and the time they took to understand the uniqueness of our community, and we appreciate their assessment of this ordinance as being balanced and fair. Along with the support of your staff, we have the support of the community of Los Osos, the San Luis Obispo Planning Department, the Planning Commission, and our Board of Directors. We urge you to support their recommendations to certify this ordinance amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Maggie Jurin, followed by Maggie Guy, Beverly Boyd, and Margaret Mayfield. Maggie Jurin, please state your name for the record and begin.
Yes, my name is Maggie Jurin. And my husband and I own a vacation rental management company and manage properties in Los Osos. I'm opposed to the approval of the proposed amendments to the LCP for Los Osos for multiple reasons. Los Osos was given the opportunity to implement proximity and cap regulation several years ago when Cayucas and Cambria made modifications, but they opted out and stuck with requiring a minor use permit. Now the community is requesting to implement these types of regulations to guide the approval of vacation rental licenses, and yet they still are requiring the minor use permit, which will cost an applicant close to $5,000. This is not required in the other unincorporated coastal areas, so it is not fair to waste the time of the County Planning Commission and force an applicant to go through this laborious process. The LCP should stipulate either one option or another, but not both. Next, a proximity rule of 500 feet can literally eliminate homes that are 3 streets away, which goes way beyond protecting a neighborhood. This is way out of line with Cayucas and Cambria. Yes, Los Osos is not the tourist town that those two communities are, but more and more visitors are requesting to stay in Los Osos due to families living here and many other outdoor activities available. Los Osos is increasingly becoming a second home market as well, and participate in particularly in the neighborhoods surrounding the bay, such as Baywood. Most of these homes are worth $1 to $3 million, so you can be sure that the owners will not be renting them out as long-term housing, but will keep them for their own enjoyment. Without the ability to rent it out as a vacation rental, the home will sit empty for much of the year, resulting in no TOT revenue and no sales revenue for the businesses in town that rely heavily on tourist dollars, and also significantly curtails the Coastal Commission's charter to ensure there is affordable lodging options for everyone. It just doesn't make sense to allow Los Osos to go forward with regulations that are so out of step with other coastal towns and are very punitive towards the
All right. Thank you. Next is Maggie Guy. Please state your name and begin.
Hi, my name is Maggie Guy, and I wanted to speak today regarding the vacational ordinance proposed for Los Osos. As someone who has grown up in Los Osos and is currently raising a family, I believe this ordinance is too strict and costly for our neighbors. I believe in preserving Los Osos and maintaining its best interest. Los Osos is my home and hopefully always will be. To require our neighbors to apply for a minor use permit, a minimum of about $5,000 after meeting all requirements for a short-term rental license does not seem ethical to me. I currently help manage a vacation rental company in Cayucas, and I feel confident that Los Osos will not and does not have the same demand for short-term rentals as Morro Bay and Cayucas does. I have been to meetings regarding short-term rentals in Los Osos in the past, and honestly do not wish to be a part of them. In the future, I felt so uncomfortable and not very welcome to talk the aggressiveness towards others not having the same opinion is shocking to me and made me feel very uncomfortable. If having a short-term rental or a homestay keeps a local, I'm all for it. It does state that there was a big public outreach within the community. As I said, I live there. I've grown up there. I did not see any of this anywhere. Not on bulletin boards, Ralph's, the liquor store down at the Bay. I mean, in Baywood, where it would be where the locals go. I think the bigger issue of with our shortage of homes is the building restrictions and the poor planning for our future. And thank you.
Thank you. Next is Beverly Boyd. Please unmute yourself and begin. Beverly Boyd, you're in as a panelist. You should be able to unmute yourself. All right, we will come back to you. Margaret Mayfield, you may unmute yourself and begin.
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Margaret Mayfield, and I'm speaking today to urge your support of staff's recommendation to approve the LCP amendment with the suggested modifications regarding vacation rentals for the community of Los Osos. I was chair of the Los Osos Community Advisory Council's Land Use Committee when the vacation rental guidelines for Los Osos were developed. This was an entirely community-driven project. As chair, it became clear that the vacation rentals were a source of increasing concern among community members. It also became clear that the Land Use Committee had no objective criteria on which to base our recommendations to the county on whether to support or deny a vacation rental permit application. Therefore, we undertook the task to create vacation rental guidelines that would inform our review process. After several months of community input, research, and discussion, the Land Use Committee recommended and LOCAC approved a list of vacation rental guidelines that address the primary concerns of residents while acknowledging the need to provide visitor accommodations. Los Osos residents recognize their opportunity to be proactive in addressing the threats to community character and affordable long-term housing that the proliferation of vacation rentals was posing in towns up and down the California coast. The guidelines that resulted from this process reflect an earnest attempt to balance visitor serving needs with protection of community character and maintaining long-term housing opportunities, in a town where new development is extremely limited due to water supply issues. Therefore, I urge your approval of this LCP amendment as it reflects the voice of our community and its vision for our future. Los Osos has a distinctly different character than other coastal towns in our area. It is not a primary tourist destination, but a bedroom community of families who live and work in our country. This amendment would help protect the unique character of Los Osos and our quiet residential neighborhoods, as well as to help maintain affordable housing stock for working families in our county. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go back to Beverly Boyd. Beverly, I see you're unmuted. Please state your name and begin.
And you can hear me?
Yes.
I'm Beverly Boyd, a Los Osos resident who participated for a year in community deliberations to develop the VR rules. I ask you to please support your staff's recommendation to approve the amendment to the Los Osos LCP regarding vacation rentals. Their report indicates the careful thought and research they've given to the issue. Although it would have preferred stricter restrictions, their compromise is something that will work to benefit the community. Los Osos is essentially a bedroom community. It is less a tourist destination with our bays, mud, and tidal fluctuations than what other towns farther up the coast offer. Our severe housing shortage results in part from the restrictions on building that were initially set in place because of the need for a sewer, and now are a result of our compromised aquifer and concerns about water shortages. Owners of lots who have waited 20 to 30 years to build continue to wait, all the while paying taxes on those useless properties. Meanwhile, motels have expanded. Rooms that are being added right now will allow for more visitors to Los Osos, yet lot owners still wait for water. Also, if Los Osos is to preserve its existence as a community, a limit on vacation rentals is essential. Vitality of the community depends on its long-term residents who give consistent support to our dentists, painters, carpenters, lawyers, and teachers, to name a few. As your staff has recognized, VRs need to be scattered around the town so as not to turn a residential street into a motel row. Your staff's footnote in their report makes sense about the need to reevaluate conditions of other towns up the coast. VRs are essentially businesses, and with businesses consuming what is zoned residential rather than existing in commercial retail zones, zoning laws become meaningless and the town loses its long-term residents. Your staff has recognized extensive thought, care, and compromises that went into the creation of this ordinance. I hope you will agree with their findings. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. That concludes public comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Carrie. Great job. Mr. Singhalal, do have a few brief comments in response to the testimony today.
Thank you, Chairperson Brownsey. There are a couple of responses that I would offer. In terms of the use it or lose it provision, I'll point out that it's not a provision that we currently have in our vacation rental ordinance for other communities. So there would be inconsistency there. That's also something that we've certainly discussed with our county council and the tax collector, and it presents some legal and like logistical challenges to enforce that. In terms of measuring the 500-foot buffer from the units rather than the property line, again, that'd be inconsistent with how we apply the buffer in other communities. And in addition, it's important to point out that a visitor of a vacation rental can use the entire property. So of the impact of the vacation rental can extend to the property limits. There were comments about how extensive the outreach efforts were. As I mentioned in my initial comments, the outreach was really led by the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And I think Sue Morgenthaler from LOCAC did a good job describing the outreach efforts that they led. In terms of the minor use permit, a requirement that is to allow for site-specific analysis of neighborhood compatibility concerns, such as noise and parking on a case-by-case basis. Finally, there were a few comments about just the fairness of having a more restrictive buffer and this 1% cap in Los Osos compared to the restrictions that we have for Avila Beach, Cayucas, and Cambria, the other coastal communities subject to the ordinance. And as I initially stated, the reason for those more strict requirements is because Los Osos is unique and that it's historically been bedroom community, providing key workforce housing for neighboring job centers in San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay. Also, as I originally mentioned, Los Osos is unique because it still has these intact, predominantly residential neighborhoods, doesn't have the same infrastructure to support a large tourism economy. So there's really an opportunity to preserve that predominantly residential character in Los Osos and preserve that increasingly scarce supply of workforce housing, especially in the context of the long building moratorium in Los Osos that's pretty much capped out the number of affordable and workforce units available in Los Osos. So that concludes my responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Singewald. Appreciate those responses. Mr. Carl, do you or Ms. Wall wish to add anything to what Mr. Singewald has just stated?
Yes, just a couple of things, Chair Brownsey. Would agree with Mr. Singewald about the process to date. I think the Los Osos Community Advisory Council representative spoke to that, as did he. We're not supportive of a postponement to rehash the issues. We think we're at the proper place. As to the rules and the balancing short-term rentals against other sorts of constraints, obviously, there's a wide range of opinion. You heard a lot of competing viewpoints today. We were concerned with the cap and the buffer too, but we do think that with the mods, we found the right balance, including in the context of the development constraints that affect this community and the demand that's evidenced by the current number of vacation rentals that are there. I do think then there were some questions about consistency of requirements as applying Los Osos versus the other areas of the county, including with respect to coastal permits, but other in other ways in terms of measurements and that sort of thing. We have started talking with county staff about this and a desire to try and make it more consistent throughout the various areas in the coastal zone where these vacation rentals have regulations. And I think the county has indicated, at least to us, that they're receptive to pursuing, potentially some changes like that with us to try and come up with some better consistency on some of these matters. This item is not the item on which to do it per se, because this is specifically focused on Los Osos. But we think there could be a complementary LCP amendment in the future that could help to address some of those kind of consistency issues. And with that, we are available for questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Carl. Appreciate that. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission. Any commissioner comments or questions? Commissioner Harmon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. It was sort of addressed, but I'm curious about the permit blocking concept, I guess, for Mr. Carl. We heard from a couple of public commenters that other communities in San Luis Obispo did have regulations prohibiting permit blocking. And then it seemed that the representative from the county said that they don't have a system for ensuring a use it or lose it type provision. The reason I ask is I think it seems like a pretty pragmatic approach to include something like that when there's a cap this low. Can you just speak to whether that is used? Have we done that before? Is that something for the future? Just a little more clarity for me about where we are with use it or lose it in general and specifically in San Luis Obispo County as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Harmon. Yes, there are definitely LCP amendments and LCPs up and down the state on short-term rentals often include, for lack of a better term, a use it or lose it provision. And there's lots of ways that it's done. It's not currently something that's going on within San Luis Obispo County. And in our conversations with county staff, they weren't aware of evidence of folks sitting on permits. That isn't to say that there might not be people sitting on permits. And as we indicated in our staff report, the county is committed to more robustly looking at that question. But as of now, I mean, there was some testimony that folks have their own evidence that people are sitting on permits. But, we looked to our county counterparts who they said they didn't have evidence of that. And so it's something that I alluded to this potential for a future LCP amendment to clean up some of these things. That's something that I think is appropriate to consider and maybe more applicable countywide than just in Los Osos. But yeah, for sure, it's a common thing in LCPs up and down the state.
And just to clarify, some speakers did allude to the use it or lose it in Morro Bay, which is adjacent to Los Osos, but it's not part of the county. So I think that might have been the confusion.
Thank you very much. So that's a city regulation. Okay, Madam Chair, may I make a few quick comments? Is now an appropriate time?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, this is a complicated one for me in some ways, because I have to admit, I often am very frustrated by the proliferation of short-term rentals, as much as I feel strongly about the need for low-cost visitor-serving accommodation in our coast, and I certainly do. I have seen, and I think we've all seen, the impacts of their extensive proliferation, particularly in smaller, more affordable coastal communities. So, you know, I'm really struggling to find a balance. And I wanted to say from the outset, it's clear that our staff has really worked hard to strike that balance. So I very much appreciate the effort that has gone into trying to work with the various parties to get to the right number. But I will also add, you know, with such a vast discrepancy between the caps and the buffers in the coastal communities in neighboring areas, I also feel a sense of discomfort that it almost feels like we're in some ways picking winners and losers. And I certainly recognize that Los Osos is a different community than some of the other more tourist-driven destinations. But by setting a cap so low, are we not also saying that it will remain that way, that it's not going to become a tourist destination? And we're sort of making the decision for folks that this is not a coastal community that they can or should want to visit. And I think that's certainly not true. Having been to Los Osos, I love it. And I think it's a place that we should all want to visit. So, you know, I have some concerns about that. The inconsistency really does it makes me a little nervous, I guess, is what I would say. And I appreciate Mr. Carl's response about the use it or lose it provision. That's something that I think would give me a lot more comfort about these low caps. Just ensuring that there's opportunity for visitors to utilize low cost accommodation or lower cost accommodation, and that is continually available for people. So I just wanted to go on record saying that I strongly support the inclusion of that provision. And I think it's an awesome way to balance protection of communities for community members with our stated commitment to low cost visitor accommodations. It really is a great solution. And I'd like to see more of that moving forward. And I really hope to see that in San Luis Obispo County's future LCPAs as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Of course. Thank you, Commissioner Harmon. Okay. That seems, Commissioner Wilson, I thought I had seen your hand. All right, please proceed.
Yeah, I just think it's also, yeah, as everyone knows how I feel about this in general, and I understand how it feels like this is a lower number because it's in comparison to places that have been so decimated, right? And, you know, if we are striving for low-cost visitor accommodation as we are supposed to for the Coastal Act. But when the Coastal Act was enacted, I don't think that, you know, the short-term rental as a technology to provide that was didn't really exist. And it's sort of come up as we've evolved in this space. And if we even with 55 units in this community, if you aggregated them into one place, which is not what's being proposed here, and said, hey, we're going to eliminate 55, a neighborhood of 55 houses in order to create low-cost accommodation or even just visitor accommodation in general, we would have a very different, and at the time when the Coastal Act was enacted, if that was what we were talking about doing, I'm not so clear like that we would have evolved to this place that we are now. And I think we've actually gone past a lot of significant impacts without a lot of analysis. And then now we're just trying to catch up to that. And in those of us in local governance that are trying to even build housing at the rate that we're losing housing in these places, I think that's an issue too. And I also want to make understand that as we allow for short-term rental housing to rentals to kind of proliferate into these spaces, that actually creates that second home investment opportunity that people are doing and actually driving prices up. And so it's really a cycle that we need to work on. And I think for me, you know, from my perspective, this isn't protective enough, but I can see that this is you know, in a direction relative to the rest of the Central Coast that I feel like we should be moving in. And so from that perspective, I'm supportive of where we're at on this particular thing. And I appreciate the community's efforts on this, and I appreciate the staff's efforts on this. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Commissioner Wilson. I'm looking for a motion, but I'll just say before that I do think the staff got this right for this community. And I think I do share the concern about the use it or lose it. I think that should be looked at by the county, because I do think, it's just, I think in my mind, it's just a good way to ensure that if there is a cap on vacation rentals, that they're actually being used for vacation rentals. Okay, so with that, I'm looking for a motion.
I'll make the motion, if that's all right.
Yes, please.
I'll make the motion, staff recommendation that, motion. I move that the commission reject implementation plan amendment LCP-3-SLO-21-0027-1 part F as submitted by San Luis Obispo County, and I recommend a yes vote. And is that the right one here?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Okay, second. I'm looking for a second.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Wilson, seconded by Faustinos. Any additional comments? The makers of the motion are asking for an aye vote.
Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amenzada?
Yes.
Amenzada, yes. Commissioner Faustinos?
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Chair Brownsey?
Aye.
Brownsey, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. And what is it? Is it the IPA or the LCP?
Yeah.
Is it the implementation plan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the implementation plan as submitted is rejected. The next motion, Commissioner? Commissioner Wilson?
Sorry, microphone off there. I move that the commission certify LCP amendment number LCP-3-SLO-21-0027-1 part F as submitted by the San Luis Obispo County if it is modified as suggested in this staff report, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner Wilson moves. Commissioner Faustinos seconds the motion to approve the LCP amendment as modified by the staff recommendation, and they're asking for an aye vote. Ms. Miller?
Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Rice?
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amenzada?
Yes.
Amenzada, yes. Commissioner Faustinos?
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Chair Brownsey?
Aye.
Brownsey, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. The amendment is adopted per the staff recommendations. And so thank you, Mr. Singewald and Ms. Wall for your attention here. Okay, so we have the last item. Mr. Carl is an appeal.
That's correct. It takes us down to the appeal calendar and item number 17A. And Kevin Kahn, the district manager for the Central Coast office, is going to give our staff presentation.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say, Chair Brownsey and commissioners. Agenda item 17A is the Morro Bay Ventures appeal, which is for a City of Morro Bay approval to construct 5 homes, one on each of 5 separate undeveloped lots within the Cloisters residential neighborhood. Slide 1 here shows the site noted. with Highway 1 just inland of it and the northern portion of the Cloisters neighborhood seaward of it in the foreground. Next slide. And slide 2 shows an overview, aerial view of the neighborhood and the site, which is noted in orange and is located seaward of Highway 1 on the northern side of Morro Bay. The subdivision's original 120 residential lots were originally approved by the Commission on Appeal in 1992, and houses have since been approved by city CDPs on those lots, and the subdivision is nearly built out. The permit was last amended by the Commission in 2020 to create the 5 additional lots on which the appealed houses would be sited. And the city's decision that's appealed here then approved the construction of those 5 residences, as well as related development such as landscaping and drainage. Next slide. Slide 3 here zooms in on the project site and shows its current undeveloped state on the left and the approved site plan on the right, with each proposed home in white and surrounding landscaping in green. The homes would all be 1-story and 14 feet in height and range in size from about 2,700 to 2,800 square feet. The appellant contends that the City Planning Commission approval was required in this case, but here the City Council approved the coastal permit. And the appellant also asserts that the City Council did not properly consider the Commission's 2020 amendment for the 5-unit subdivision and associated infrastructure, including in terms of potential inconsistencies between the two. We don't believe the appellant's contentions raise substantial issues. With respect to the city's CDP process, the Planning Commission did review and approve a previous iteration of the project, which was then appealed to the City Council, and the City Council then reviewed and approved that project, including taking the final action on the coastal permit that was appealed here. The city's action here does not appear to run counter to any LCP procedural requirements. And with respect to the project's conformance with the Commission's 2020 CDP amendment approval, there's nothing in the record to suggest that it does not conform with it or otherwise raise any significant issues. As indicated, that 2020 Commission amendment accommodated a 5-unit subdivision and the construction of related infrastructure, including a shared driveway and other site improvements. It was also preceded by a site-specific LCP amendment to allow for that subdivision that was also approved by this commission. The city's approval here would simply authorize the actual construction of the 5 residences and such related development on those already created lots. Next slide. So in conclusion, the project provides for 5 infill residences on inland lots near Highway 1, and does not give rise to any significant coastal resource concerns. So staff recommends that the commission find the appeal raises no substantial LCP conformance issues and decline to take jurisdiction over the CDP application for the project. The motion to do so is found on page 5 of the staff report, and this concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Khan. Are there any ex partes? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to open the public hearing and I will announce that 3 minutes for the appellant's perspective and 3 minutes for the applicant's perspective. Carrie, do we have representatives of either the or both of the appellants or the applicant?
Yes, we have one applicant and one appellant.
Okay, let's start with the appellant. If you could bring them in, they will have 3 minutes.
Okay, great. Betty Winholtz, I have promoted you to panelist. You should be able to unmute yourself.
I have been able to unmute myself, thank you. And I just need to be able, okay, thank you. My name is Betty Winholtz and I am the appellant. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. As a teacher, if I receive an excellent narrative from a student, I will be impressed. However, if the directions were for an expository essay, when the student will then receive an F because they did not follow directions. What you have on your screen is the CDP that was passed by the Coastal Commission just 2 years ago. As a resident, I expect my city to follow agreed upon rules as codified in our implementation plan or zoning ordinance as approved by the Coastal Commission. When the city doesn't follow directions as outlined in the zoning ordinance, I want the Coastal Commission to be concerned. When the City Council willfully doesn't follow the directions of the Coastal Commission as passed in the CDP on your screen, I would have to believe that the behaviors of the city warrant serious concern from the Coastal Commission. I expect the Coastal Commission would be disturbed by their directions being contradicted and would want them corrected, thus avoiding a precedent and future conflict. As you can see in the CDP, the proposed amendment would also allow for, and it, quote, the infrastructure, specifically a common driveway, which exists, guest parking and associated fencing, curb cuts, a sidewalk, the installation of storm drain and utility infrastructure to serve the five homes, unquote. The question here is not about the five homes. It's about in the inclusion of the infrastructure. What the statement in the staff report ended up saying instead of what was in this document was the five homes proposed the design, including materials, color boards, and placement on the lots, and quote, conformance with the development standards, not listing those. But in the staff report, the only ones listed were the height and setback as being in conformance. And later in a current revised five home plan, it merely listed the asphalt entry road. So the infrastructure specifically stated in the CDP, the guest parking, the fencing, the curb cuts, the sidewalk are not in this approval. The Coastal's housing development has a distinct look as the public view shed to the ocean. It was approved by the Coastal Commission with certain infrastructure to maintain that uniqueness. The Coastal Commission approved CDP was not followed when the City Council approved the addition. Therefore, I believe this appeal is worthy of a de novo hearing to maintain the authority of the commission and reinstate the standards of the commission for the cloisters as set forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winholtz. Carrie, and who is the representative of the applicant?
Kevin Huber. He's now in as a panelist as well.
Okay, Mr. Huber, do you represent the applicant or the city of Morro Bay?
I'm the applicant, Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. You have 3 minutes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Brownsy and commissioners. I'd like to first thank your staff for the review and ongoing communication with us through this process. And I'd also like to thank you, commissioners, for your service on this commission. Having been on a university board for 9 years with multi-day board meetings, I know the time and commitment it takes. And I also know that as the last agenda item on a three-day meeting, I'm the only thing standing between you and your weekend, so I'll get through this. This project, it was originally a six-lot subdivision. It was appealed to you in 2018 after a thorough review in March of 2020, and based on the findings and recommendation of your staff, this commission approved the immaterial amendment to the original CDP for the cloisters, and then to comply with the findings of that approval, we were required to reduce our lot count from 6 to 5, which we did. This modification to our use permit, tentative map, and a new CDP was processed and approved by the City of Morro Bay in October of 2021. And although we had already received approval from the architect that was the designated representative for the cloisters design review in 2018, we resubmitted another request for approval to the new architect that handles the design review. We received conditional approval in a letter from the design review committee for the cloisters on October 13th, 2021. In their approval of our project, the City of Morro Bay made the following findings. Our project's mitigated neg deck and monitoring program under CEQA was approved and certified. The project is an allowable use in the current general plan designation and zoning designation. It complies with the certified LCP for the City of Morro Bay. The project complies with all applicable zoning and development standards, and the project is consistent with the cloister CDP as amended by this commission in March of 2020. Our architect for this project is the same architect that wrote the design guidelines for the cloisters, and this project is consistent with the CCNRs and design guidelines for the cloisters. Issues relative to the private driveway that have been raised and curb gutter and sidewalk on that private driveway, there's nothing in the CCNRs or design guidelines that requires this, nor does this issue raise any coastal resource concern or run counter to any procedural requirement of the LCP. We've read your staff report. We agree with your staff's conclusions and recommendations. And based on the foregoing, I would respectfully request the commission support the recommendation of your staff and determine that this appeal raises no substantial issue and decline to take jurisdiction over the CDP. I'm available now or during a later discussion if you have any questions. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Mr. Huber. Terry, are there any other, anybody else who wants to testify?
No.
Okay, great. All right, then I'm gonna close the public hearing and bring it back. Mr. Khan, do you have anything you'd like to say in response to the testimony?
I'll go ahead, Chair Brownsy. We just have a couple of concluding comments. We really don't see any coastal resource issues here. We also don't see any conflicts with past commission decisions. This is infill residential development. And I think Kevin appropriately covered the actual appeal contentions in his initial presentation. So we're available for comment or questions.
Sounds great. Okay, bringing it back to the commission. Any comments or questions, or is there a motion to find no substantial issue? Okay, seeing no comments or questions, I'm looking for a motion. Apparently it's on page 6.
It's on page 5, Chair Brownsy.
And it's on page 5. Yes, Commissioner Amanzada.
I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-3-MRB-21-0078 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under section 30603, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Commissioner Amanzada, seconded by Commissioner Faustinos. They're looking for an aye vote to find no substantial issue. Ms. Miller.
Commissioner Rice.
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga.
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner Amanzada.
Yes.
Amanzada, yes. Commissioner Faustinos.
Yes.
Faustinos, yes. Commissioner Escalante.
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Harmon.
Yes.
Harmon, yes. Commissioner Hart.
Yes.
Hart, yes. Chair Brownsy.
Aye.
Brownsy, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. No substantial issue is found by the commission. Okay, and that concludes our agenda. Mr. Ainsworth, do you have any parting comments?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to thank all the commissioners. A fantastic meeting and just really a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ainsworth. Thank you to the commissioners. Thank you to the public. And thank you to our great staff who made it look easy for us. Anyway, so everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next month, and be prepared to roll up your sleeves.
Thank you so much, Chair. Great job.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye, everybody. Great job to everybody.
Bye, everybody.